We are finally able to make an arrest of an individual by the name of Brian Cole.
He had zero criminal history, saying that the government, when they were presenting, said that he was getting riled up online. He was all engaging in these kind of theories and things. And they said, there's no evidence of that at all. No messages, no texts, no evidence of any radicalization from their perspective. And they had to come back out and, as I mentioned earlier, admit that and say he was a consumer of this media, not a poster.
An investigation spearheaded by the deputy director and the ADIC of our Washington field office brought in a new team of investigators and experts, reexamined every piece of evidence, sifted through all the data, something that the prior administration refused and failed to do.
He is a level one autistic man. He's got OCD. This explains all of the things that they're alleging, saying that the destruction of the cell phone evidence wasn't destruction of evidence. It was just an autistic man with OCD who resets his phone to the tune of 943 times.
What I think happened, this is Kyle Serafin's full opinion, I believe the FBI identified Brian Cole probably in that loop of like maybe 90 where they did some additional work. He was generally speaking in the area of, and then when they ran it down, they found out that he was not a good match because the pipe bomber route, it's roughly near where it says 1, 2, 3, 4 in a tight little cluster towards the center of the map. That's where the pipe bomber would have had to have been for the actual time that they say that the person was there. So there's a route of the actual bomber and it's very, very small. You see it red and green. The number one is not inside sector number one. The number two is not inside sector number two very clean, or I guess it's on the edge. Three is right on the line, four and so on. So they have pings that are relatively close to where they should be, but they're not actually a slam dunk. This is not evidence. This is thin. This is like an indication to go do further information. Brian Cole Jr. was arrested under a complaint that was filed with the district court, the District of D.C., and they arrested a guy out of Woodbridge, Virginia for the pipe bomber case, claimed that he was the one who did it. If you don't get that indictment, then you have to take it in front of a judge for a preliminary hearing.
This is really interesting. Apparently, D.C. is unique in that it is the only district where this can occur, where a Superior Court grand jury can be used in district court. Interesting that Boasberg's kind of floating around at the center of it all too.
They took every means, they filed all the means, they put all these motions out that said, hey, please, like, let's kick this down the line. We want to go to next year. We want to wait until we get in front of a grand jury. We don't want to have a preliminary hearing. And the defense, which is really aggressive, it's a new law firm that's out of Tennessee. They're former United States attorneys and they're apparently very good, went out and said, no. We insist on having the preliminary hearing today, Tuesday, December the 30th. And so DOJ panicked and yesterday took Brian Cole Jr.'s case in front of a superior court, the lower court, in front of a grand jury, and got an indictment there.
You know, the prosecution was there. There was about 6 to 7 prosecutors sitting at that table. It was a little lopsided because he's sitting there with his one attorney. But that's obviously very standard. If you have the weight of the federal government against you, generally there's going to be 10 prosecutors. And if you're lucky, you could afford an attorney or else you get a public defender.
Right now you're seeing the house that Brian Cole Jr. lives in, and that's his vehicle. That's a blue Nissan Sentra 2017. This is the map of the cell phone pings and the towers that DOJ used. And now you're seeing what we believe is Brian Cole Jr.'s car driving at 8:04. It's driving while the pipe bomber is on foot over a mile away. And there's one other car that matches this description, and it's driven by a white person. We can't see who the driver of this is. But if that is Brian Cole Jr.'s car, then Brian Cole Jr. was driving while the pipe bomber was on foot dropping off the bombs, and it couldn't have been him.
Oh, this is a real Perry Mason moment. If I sound a little speechless here, this is so devastating.
So very simply, between the hours of 7:34 p.m. and 8:18 p.m. on January 5th, 2021, the pipe bomber is on foot, walking around with the hood on. That's who the FBI and the DOJ allege Brian Cole Jr. is, that figure. But the problem is a car that matches Brian Cole's car is in motion in Washington, D.C., over a mile away and driving in a route that's at least 7 minutes away and could not be him. There's no way outside of teleportation or some sort of magical time warp that Brian Cole Jr. is both driving his car and walking around at that time. So at the very least, it shows that there would have to be another person involved. More likely than not, what it shows is they've got the wrong guy altogether, which is what I believe for quite a while now.
I'm funded by you. And I appreciate your support very humbly. Thank you for your support, those that have. Those that haven't, what are you waiting for? Our information is bar none the best. The supplements are game-changing. The methylene blue, the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the widest selection of Patriot Apparel t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. But there's a deal going for a few more days where you buy any supplement and get a bottle of the Shilajit gummies or Atomic Defense Super Immune Booster free. You choose which free gift you want. That funds our operation at thealexjonesstore.com. I want to thank those that have stood with us. If you're going to buy anything, become a VIP. Just in your profile, $30 a month, cancel any time, no charge. You get $40 every time you spend $30 to spend. So you make $10, you're going to buy anything, you should be a VIP. Then you get special deals, special offers, special sales on top of everything. Also, you get big discounts when you use the app for Android or for Apple at alexjonesapp.com. This links you through to get the free apps right there. So it's the same shopping cart online. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I want to thank you all for your support.
Watching the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 6th of January, 2025. A inauspicious anniversary for us, and we'll actually be talking to Sam, our reporter. I was arrested for January 6th a little later in the show. But first, we're starting the show off with a guest, Jason Jones. He is a film producer, author, activist, and human rights worker. His mission is to promote the incomparable dignity and beauty of the human person through the power of film. Jason also hosts the Jason Jones Show podcast, which can be found on Substack at thejasonjonesshow.substack.com. And you can follow Jason Jones on X at Jason Jones VPP. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good to see you, Harrison.
Very good to have you here. And
have me on.
I've been excited to have you on because you gallivant around the world doing this incredible stuff and getting, you know, a first person view of some of the craziest things that we talk about on the show. You're actually there on the ground experiencing it. Tell us about where you've been recently and, you know, what you learned while you were there.
Yeah, well, the last time I think I was here on your show was for Lahaina, and you and your audience really helped us rebuild the Christian school in Lahaina weeks after the fire. And now I just returned from Beth-Sahor and Bethlehem and Teba, the Christian villages in the West Bank that right now are suffering extreme settler violence.
Yeah.
So it was a real privilege to spend Christmas in Bethlehem, and I brought two of my sons with me as well.
Yeah, we're covering it sort of during the Christmas time. There's always just something so disgusting. I don't know what the word is, but it's like, you know, you're at home at night doing Advent with your kids, reading about these places, reading about, you know, Mary on the donkey riding through these places. And then in the day you're opening up the newspaper and you're seeing settler raids and just all this, you know, arson attacks and all this horror in the Holy Land. And it's just that dichotomy is very jarring. And this has been a particular interest for me, obviously, because covering the geopolitics around Israel and the fact that Trump apparently is against these settlements, but they're not stopping. I mean, this is a real, like, hot-button issue. It's sort of the center of a bunch of geopolitical conflicts. What made you want to go there? Why were you there? What were you looking into?
I wanted to go there actually in late October, early November, when the Christians begin to farm, and then settlers attack them, trying to disrupt their farming. So Americans will go and stand as protective shields between the settlers who are violent. Often of them have American passports as well. So you'll have Americans standing between Americans attacking the oldest Christian community on earth. But I happened to be shooting a film in New York City at the time. And so some of my Christian friends from Bethlehem and Beth-Sahor said, well, you should come spend Christmas with us. And, I thought, you know, not only am I going to do that, I'm going to bring a film crew. I'm going to travel around the West Bank. I'm going to document the plight of the Christian community, because to me, it's quite sorrowful that here in the West, we have really turned a blind eye on the eradication of the oldest Christian communities in the world. And we're talking about in Iraq. We saw this in Syria. We're seeing this now in India, which a lot of folks don't realize that St. Thomas himself went to the Jewish communities in India and all the routes into India. And there were a lot of conversions. So there's a Christian community in India that's 2,000 years old that this past Christmas suffered Hindu nationalist violence. So it seems to be the oldest Christian communities right now are holding on, you know, with their fingertips. And we, the Christians in the West, aren't even paying attention.
Well, and the actions of our government basically are destroying these communities that, like you say, have literally been there since the time of the apostles. I mean, some of these places were founded by the people that walked with Jesus. And it seems like everywhere we get involved, the Christian community gets wrecked, whether it's Syria now, you know, persecuting Christians. We've ousted Assad and put in this, you know, radical guy that's hunting down Christians there. I mean, I've done posts on X where, you know, you go to Grog and go, give me the Christian population of Iraq before and after the, you know, American invasion. Everywhere we invade, it seems like Christians start off at a high percentage and end up at a very low percentage. And I can't help but notice that and wonder if it's an unfortunate side effect or, you know, part of the reason that we're doing this.
Well, Harrison, I was in Iraq during the war with ISIS, and I was documenting the plight of not only the Christian community, but of the Yazidi community facing total obliteration. And, you know, most of the ethnic or the ecclesia side is what they call it, the cleansing of religious communities. Most of the cleansing of the Christian communities in Iraq happened even before Obama was president. So during the height of the occupation, during the surge, while all of this was happening, these Christian communities that have been there since the first century were being wiped off the face of the earth. And so to have Benjamin Netanyahu this past weekend from Mar-a-Lago on X, it seemed like some evangelical publicist got a hold of his X account and began tweeting his commitment to protecting the Christian communities of the world. Well, it's very easy. Stop luring America into regime change wars. We destroyed the secular equilibrium in Syria and Iraq, which protected the Christian communities for decades. And now we see in, you know, Bethlehem, in Beth-Sahor, 80% Christian town, Beth-Sahor. Israel just this past November approved a new settlement that's encroaching on the shepherd's field. They're going to take half of the shepherd's field where the shepherds were when they saw the star. The settlers want to take half the field, and already 19 Christian families have been displaced since November. So Netanyahu says, well, there are 75 violent youth in the West Bank that are causing all of these problems. No, that's not what's happening. There is a policy of using settlers backed by the police and the military to cleanse the Christian Palestinians from their land. And that's why we see the most brutal abuses in Tebe. I was just there a week ago. And it's really a frightening thing to see this little ancient Christian community surrounded by violent settlers, and they can't protect themselves. If they protect themselves, they're dead. So they just have to suffer abuse. And then you have in Bethlehem and in the outskirts of Bethlehem, new settlements being approved. And this is why the Christian community of the Holy Land is evaporating. This is why since 1948, the Christians are vanishing from Jerusalem, from Bethlehem, from Ramallah. This is why. What happened in the late 40s? And for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, these Christian communities were protected. And since the late 1940s, we've seen a complete evisceration of the Christian communities in the Holy Land.
Yeah, and it really gives, you know, the lie to the claim that we constantly hear that basically you're on the side of the Muslims if you are against what Israel's doing in Gaza. It's always, oh, so you want Hamas to win. And whether it's Gaza or the West Bank, there are Christian communities that are there that have existed there for 2,000 years, and yet they're really in crisis moment right now, and they might not, you know, make it another 10 years if things keep going the way they're going.
No, and what's embarrassing is or uncanny is that we as American Christians have more power to preserve the ancient Christian communities of the Holy Land than the Christians who live there.
Right.
The Christians who live there are just fighting for their very existence. They have, you know, high unemployment. There's not a lot of opportunities. They're not allowed to leave. If they leave, they can never come back. And this is a policy of the state of Israel. Just to give you an example of how bad it is. In Gaza, every Christian building has been bombed multiple times. 2 weeks into the war, the oldest continuous-use church in the world, St. Porphyrius, was bombed.
Right.
You have a Christian community that was founded by St. James, so it's been there since the first century. You have two Catholic women stepping out of mass to use the restroom that were shot by IDF snipers in December of 2023. So you have just this past July, you had the church bombed again, killing parishioners and wounding the priest. In July, also our warehouse in Gaza, after several months of working and maneuvering to get baby formula into Gaza, hours after the baby formula was delivered with permissions and approvals and everything done properly, our warehouse was bombed, killing two of our aid workers and destroying 5,000 canisters of baby formula. Now you have Pope Leo and you have Cardinal Pete Zabala begging the state of Israel to allow the children with cancer, the Christian children with cancer in Gaza to leave for treatment, and Israel is refusing.
Yeah. And so it's so bizarre now that they've taken this new tack that you pointed out, and it's not just Netanyahu. I mean, this is clearly a strategy they're pursuing now. Netanyahu pledges support for global Christian communities under Islamic threat. Israel's role in defending persecuted Christians from JPost. I mean, these are all from the last week or so. This one's published today. Israel pushes ahead with vast illegal settlement in heart of the West Bank. So there's this, they're speaking out of two sides of their mouth. They're claiming that, well, Israel is going to protect Christians all around the world, not even just in, you know, the Holy Land, but everywhere. Simultaneously, they are dismantling the oldest Christian communities in the entire world right there in the heart of the West.
Yeah, and it's worse than that. Like, so 2 years ago in Artsakh, an ancient Armenian community going back to the 3rd century was ethnically cleansed by the Islamist regime of Azerbaijan.
Right.
Those weapons that Azerbaijan used to ethnically cleanse the Christians from Artsakh were provided by the state of Israel.
Right.
India, our ally, Israel's ally. The rise of Hindu nationalism is a great threat to Christianity. In fact, in one state alone last year, over 300 churches were destroyed. So there is a political Islamic threat. You know, this summer at our organization, the Vulnerable People Project, and you can go see, guys, what we do at vulnerablepeopleproject.com. This summer we lost a security guard. We provide security in Nigeria, not only for Christian communities, but also for the last Jewish community in Nigeria. We lost one of our security guards this summer who was assassinated while trying to defend 3 seminarians from being kidnapped. So look, I'm not naive to the threat of political Islam, but we also have Hindu nationalism. We also have Zionism. We have in Nicaragua a real threat now on Christians, and also in the CCP. In the CCP, we've had 15 now bishops, Catholic bishops, that have been just disappeared.
Really?
A billionaire Catholic layman, the equivalent of, like, you know, Hong Kong's Elon Musk, right. Jimmy Lai, very charismatic and outspoken democracy activist, is going to die in prison. And his activism was animated by his Christian faith. So we see a global war on Christianity, but really it's striking at the heart of the oldest Christian communities. And the oldest and most vulnerable Christian community in the world right now is in Gaza and the West Bank.
Yeah, and the one under the most threat. Again, just some headlines. Christian communities in Israel face growing hostility, annual report reveals. This is from the Catholic World Report, where, again, Cardinal Pete Zabala has come out, you know, denouncing this. He's the Latin bishop there in the Holy Land. In the birthplace of Christianity, churches and communities are coming under attack from Jewish settlers. Violence against Christians on the rise in Israel. They want to cleanse Syria of Christians. Community speaks of betrayal, terror, and exile since the ouster of Assad. And then you have Trump top aides ask Netanyahu to change policy in occupied West Bank. But again, as you point out, there's political Islam. There's hell, atheism is doing, you know, extreme damage against Christianity. There are all these threats, but there's this simultaneous threat from Israel against the Christian communities in the Middle East, while simultaneously they are running this giant operation to bring thousands of evangelical preachers to Israel to harness the American evangelical community to support Israel when Israel is killing Christians there in the Holy Land. So there's this deep, deep, not irony necessarily, but like betrayal sort of embedded in this that in a way just makes it that much more sickening. I don't know.
Yeah, I asked, as a Catholic, I asked a Palestinian evangelical pastor. I said, you know, how do young Palestinian evangelicals grapple with the fact that you can go and watch prominent pastors in the United States openly advocating ethnic cleansing? With Gnostic, weird, strange Gnostic appeals to, like, the Palestinians or the reincarnation of the Amalekites or whatever kind of nonsense that they're spouting. And I asked this evangelical pastor, I said, you're evangelical, I'm Catholic, but as a Palestinian evangelical minister, do you ever have young Palestinian evangelical Christians come to you and say, I don't believe in God, they use the Jewish scriptures to justify our ethnic cleansing, they ignore the New Testament, our own co-religionists are advocating our annihilation, I don't believe in God anymore. I'm not coming to church anymore. And this pastor said this happens quite a bit, actually.
Right.
And we call it the faith Nakba.
Mm.
That there is a catastrophe of faith among Christians who are so scandalized to see Christians in the West standing by and cheering on their ethnic cleansing, their annihilation.
Right, because people have been told, basically, they have this almost religious dedication to Israel. I shouldn't even say almost. I mean, they are being told by the people who run their church, you know, Israel is the Israel from the Bible, and you have a God-given, you know, demand that, that you support them. And so their support of Israel is tied up with their religion. And so when they learn things about Israel they don't like, and when they start going, well, wait, this isn't good, it actually causes a crisis of faith because it's so intertwined. Their support of Israel is so intertwined with their faith that they think, if I'm going to stop supporting Israel, I also have to drop my faith. I mean, I think that's a big issue. And it sort of, you know, this has come about with Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk seemed to be turning away from Israel. At the same time, there were rumors that he was looking into Catholicism or this other stuff. Because again, if you see your love of Israel as being somehow intertwined with your faith, you can't just give up one and not the other. It's, that's a really dangerous combination.
No, and what I love about being Christian is that there is no doubt that Islam is an othering religion.
Mm.
You know, it's like there's the house of God and the house of war. Zionism, where Islam says you're other, Judaism says we're other.
Mm.
We're ever other, completely other. In Christianity, we don't have an other. We can even be charitable and understand that they see us as other, but they're still our brothers and sisters. You know, when I'm in the West Bank, I fall in love with the Palestinians. But then when I go to Israel, I'm charmed by the Israelis.
Right.
Like, I really love the Israelis. If you want to bless the people of Israel, you would not advocate this brutal, disgusting ethnic cleansing, which is not only undermining America's long-term national interests, it's undermining the very existence of the state of Israel. And you look at the, just the record number of suicides that took place last year in the IDF, and then now the IDF is trying to raise the number of abortions per soldier from 2 to 3. I don't know if you saw this.
Whoa.
And so I would think it's fair to say that no one is, if they're providing this many abortions to young soldiers, no one has killed more young Israeli babies in the IDF. So if you care about the Israeli people and the Palestinian people, their destiny is intertwined. And it is something that's interesting to me that there are those that will use the actions of the state of Israel to foment Jew hatred and anti-Semitism.
Right.
And then, the same way that those will use the actions of Hamas to justify the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. But it's just very important that we as Christians, and this is something that's been a privilege of me with my organization, the Vulnerable People Project, whether I'm in the front lines in Ukraine or in Iraq or in Israel and in the West Bank, I'm there as a Christian serving vulnerable communities. And so I don't see like this is my friend and this is my enemy. I just feel like I'm here to serve the folks that are here, whoever they are. And this is the great privilege of being a Christian. But Christian Zionists are actually a curse to the Israeli people, the state of Israel. And that's how I see it, because they are, you know, you look at Ambassador Huckabee. Is he the U.S. ambassador to Israel, or is he Israel's ambassador into the United States? He went into Gaza, and I can tell you for a fact he witnessed hunger and starvation. But then he comes back and he looks in the microphones and then he looks into the cameras and he lies.
Right.
Said he saw no signs. I know people that were there alongside of him who said that they witnessed him witnessing starvation and hunger. And he was covering for the crimes of the state of Israel. Why aren't journalists allowed in? Why? My organization has been operating in Gaza since the war started. In fact, we've provided every Christian family in Gaza pop-up homes to last, you know, for the winter, and we're providing firewood now. We've been providing the water for the churches, for the orphan communities. We throw Children's Day events during the summer. I have not yet been approved to go in as either a journalist or a human rights activist, and I've petitioned to go in both ways. Why aren't we letting journalists in? What are they covering up? Well, now we saw the mass graves of literally children and infants that had been shot through their hands. Their hands were tied, and they were putting their hands up in front of their face, and they shot through their hands and into their face. So this is what people are going to find out. So they're trying to cover up their crimes. They've never even addressed the obvious crimes. Two Christian women were shot by snipers, by a sniper, coming out of mass, a mother and a daughter, and there's no consequences.
Yeah.
If you go to our website, vulnerablepeopleproject.com, we evacuated wounded women who were pregnant into Egypt through the Rafah Gate early on. And then I went to Cairo and I interviewed them. And one of the women said, you know, you can see on social media, she found it, she showed it to us, and we put it in the video when we interviewed her. The IDF went into her home, this Christian woman, smashed her statues of Mary, smashed her statues of Jesus, and then put on her lingerie and put the videos of them dancing on social media.
Right.
No consequences for this.
That's brutal. And it's, And again, it's this disconnect where we're told that, oh, if you're against Israel, you just love Hamas. And don't you know that if you went there, they would kill you because they kill all the Christians? It's like it just completely disconnected from reality.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's why I'm actually taken aback. And I don't know if proud is the right word, but I'm just really surprised at how many people have had the courage to stand up and speak out against the hell on earth that's happening in Gaza, because it comes at a social cost. There are consequences to it.
Yeah.
And so when, as an organization, early on when the war started, I had to make a decision. Am I going to speak up about all this destruction of civilian targets? This was 2 weeks into the war already. They were targeting churches and
Christian hospitals.
Yeah. I knew that it would come at a cost to my organization. But, you know, as the months and years have unfolded, it's just become undeniable.
Yeah. And of course, the videos of Gaza just being completely unrecognizable. I mean, utterly destroyed. And yeah, we have lots of photos and videos from your time there. I don't know if we want to go to those, or we can go to some of those in the next segment. But I know you spent a lot of time in the West Bank, and I know I have a video, I'm not sure which number it is, but it's sort of a time lapse showing some of the new West Bank settlements being built, because
I'm so glad you're doing this.
Yeah, they're cropping up all over the place. And again, I wonder, is Trump not feeling like he got slapped in the face here? Because I want to go to this video real quick, and we'll have to continue this on the other side. But let's go to clip two here. This was Trump being asked about this, I believe, just a few weeks ago. I believe this was either in October or November, maybe a little bit earlier. Maybe it was around the time that we were doing the deals, in the summer around Iran. But this was Trump being asked directly about the settlements in the West Bank that are right now being expanded continuously. But here's what Trump said when he was asked about it.
Did you promise leaders this week that you would not allow Israel to annex the West Bank? Is that something that you said?
I will not allow Israel to annex the West Bank. No, I will not allow it. It's not going to happen.
Did you speak with Netanyahu about this
today? Yeah, but I'm not going to allow it. Whether I spoke to him or not, I did. But I'm not allowing Israel to annex the West Bank. There's been enough. It's time to stop now, okay?
So, I mean, I thought that was interesting from the jump, because he almost never gives an answer like that, right? If you ask him about Gaza, you ask him about anything, it's all, well, it's up in the air and we'll see, and I don't really like that, but da da da. But here he says no. Straight up, he just says, I'm not going to allow it to happen. It's not going to happen. Meanwhile, since then, they've expanded these settlements continuously, and it looks like they're very much on the road to annexation.
This is why, first of all, I've done a lot of shows. You know, I've been on a lot of networks. But when I'm on your shows, it's the biggest impact. And so when you invited me on, I know the White House is going to see this interview. They're going to be aware of what we're talking about. And so one of the things that's just most admirable about President Trump is he hates bullies. He hates thugs. You can tell by that answer.
Yep.
He's sick and tired of being henpecked to change his position on this.
Right.
Right. And I'm sure Ambassador Huckabee is the guy doing a lot of the henpecking. He needs to be fired. But, if we stop the Shtema settlement, this will be a huge success.
That's the Shepherd's Field one.
Yes, that's the Shepherd's Field. They're encroaching on the Shepherd's Field, and they really believe this will be the end of the Christian community in Bethlehem and Beth-Sahor. This will be the end. They're trying to wipe away the Christians in Teva. And that's really a horrifying experience, going to Teva, because you can just feel how alone they were. And I was just there a week ago, and you feel even guilty leaving.
Right.
You know, you feel like you're with your friend on their deathbed, and you're like, oh, got to go.
Right.
And I didn't even want to leave. But I really do believe that President Trump is sincere. He doesn't want to see the occupation of the West Bank and the annihilation of the Palestinian people. This is something he doesn't want to see. This is something I think most Americans agree with. And, if we can stop the, Shtema settlement, if it's rolled back, if we see a rollback of all these new settlements outside of Beth-Sahor and Teva, we can see maybe a revitalization of the Christian community. If we don't see that, Netanyahu is just gaslighting us with all of his rhetoric.
100%. And they need outside help. They can't do it themselves. We'll be right back.
I'm funded by you, and I appreciate your support. Very humbly, thank you for your support, those that have. Those that haven't, what are you waiting for? Our information is bar none the best. The supplements are game-changing. The Methylene Blue, the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the widest selection of Patriot Apparel, t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. But there's a deal going for a few more days where you buy any supplement and get a bottle of the Shilajit Gummies or Atomic Defense Super Immune Booster free. You choose which free gift you want. That funds our operation, thealexjonesstore.com. I want to thank those that have stood with us. you're going to buy anything, become a VIP. Just in your profile, $30 a month, cancel any time, no charge. You get $40 every time you spend $30 to spend. So you make $10, you're going to buy anything, you should be a VIP. Then you get special deals, special offers, special sales on top of everything. Also, you get big discounts when you use the app for Android or for Apple at alexjonesapp.com. Just links you through to get the free apps right there. So it's the same shopping cart online. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I want to thank you all for your support. The problem is, this is when the globals can knock the power up and blame the Russians or whoever. They've already pre-programmed that. This is when they could set off attack nuke, try to shoot down Air Force One with surface-to-air missiles, blame Iran. This is the globalist color revolution that they've done hundreds of times around the world. Hundreds since 1947. Operation Ajax, Operation Gladio. The list goes on and on. I just keep saying, danger, danger, mortal danger to the country. Mortal danger to your future. I mean, I can physically feel the anxiety and electricity shooting up and down my body and the palpable, not fear, because that's not the feeling I feel, the feeling of ready to fight. And I'm fighting in the information war. I have electricity feeling in my teeth right now. I have to make myself not bare my teeth and bug my eyes out right now as I address you, because that's what I feel like. People want to conquer us. You want war? But I understand it's informational. So that's where I am right now. But I just showed you who I am. That's what I feel like every second right now. That's the urgency. Fauci and Gates and Schumer and Newsom want to destroy our future. Who want us to live in bondage? Who want to cut our children's penises off? You Satanist. I'm just telling you, I've never felt so much urgency. My spider sense has never even close to this much on fire. My cells tell me I'm in a war. And to girt myself for it. And to guard myself for truth, because we are up against the scum of the earth that will give us no quarter. This is an endless war, a fight between good and evil. And in this cycle, good is rising and good is winning, and evil can feel it in its bones. And it is rising to the challenge.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and at AJN Live. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to alexjonesapp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Now, back to our program.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, infowars.com/show. Share that link. Please do share the links on X. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. My guest is Jason Jones. He's at Jason Jones VPP. VPP, of course, stands for Vulnerable People Project. And you can go to vulnerablepeopleproject.com.
Is that right? Yes, sir.
Vulnerablepeopleproject.com to support the work they're doing. I know we have a couple videos of some of the work that you're doing. Do you want to intro one of these? Maybe the food?
Sure. Yeah. It's one of the great things we've been doing is, you know, we're a small NGO, but we're gritty. And people go, how do you do what you do? I'm like, really? I take a piece of paper, write my goal, get food to the orphans and Christians in Gaza. And then I go to the Middle East or wherever I have to go. And I make sure we make it happen. So, here is our hot food distribution. Because we're small, we really try to do something special. So, we do a lot of hot food distributions, even over the summer. I'm a father. I have 7 children and 4 grandchildren. So, you know, I do a lot of work in war zones and serving communities facing genocide and ethnic cleansing. And I think, what would I want my children to have if they were trapped there? So this summer, We did a traveling Children's Day event across Gaza at the different camps where we provided shave ice, wine-style shave ice, and hot meals, and clowns and singing and dancing. And we went around to all the different camps where the orphans were. And there's 18,000 children in Gaza without a living relative. Without a living relative. That's not orphans. That's just 18,000 children. So, yeah, to be able to deliver hot meals is every morning. It's probably not a good for my health. But the first thing I do is I grab my phone and I check Signal and WhatsApp for the updates of our deliveries around the world, but especially in Gaza. And then every night before I go to sleep, I check my phone to see if there have been any updates. Probably not healthy.
Well, as long as it's good news coming over on the other line, but I can't imagine it always is.
It's not good news usually.
Oh.
There's always something, yeah. You know, it's always something sorrowful. But it's like these videos just make me happy. Sometimes though, before I'm lying in bed and I'm just watching these over and over and over again. And, on X, I pinned, I don't know if you guys can scroll over, but I pinned, our delivery of our Children's Day events in the summer. And we're preparing to do a pizza party. Chicago, here it is. Yeah, this is, I even brought in pools.
Wow.
And, we found a bombed out old icy shop. And we used it to make ICs.
Wow. I mean, it just blows my mind that after 2 years of the war, that there's still people around, that there's still children hanging out. Like, it seems so inconceivable to me that they are still even any people there with the amount of death that we've seen come out of that area. But man, they are resilient, if nothing else, huh?
No, they're really, you know, I say at the Vulnerable People Project, we serve strong people placed in impossible situations. And I feel like a guy that rescues Olympic swimmers from the middle of the ocean with my yacht.
Right.
You know, VPP is like our boat. And it's almost embarrassing sometimes that I'm the one helping them. You know, I feel like they should be helping me. How am I helping these wonderful people? But it is a privilege to do it. And like you said, that is the shocking thing about war. I remember when I was in Iraq traveling with the Peshmerga as they were battling back ISIS and liberating Christian Yazidi villages. People said, were you scared? You know, I'm scared on the flight over to Erbil when there's a little turbulence.
Right.
But when you get on the ground, you're like, I'm not special.
Right.
There's children here. There's women here. Why would I be afraid for me?
Right.
Who am I to be afraid of? You know, why would I be afraid when there are all these children who are living here? I'm going to be here for a week or two.
Right.
And they're here for the rest of their life, and they might not have much time left.
Right.
Tragically.
Yeah, and we actually had a video yesterday. I don't know if the crew can pull it in from yesterday. Gaza, it's a Gaza church, and you know it's the middle of a ceremony. They're you know going through the process, and just out of nowhere, boom, and the windows fly open, and a bomb had landed just right next door. And I can't imagine the psychological weight of just knowing at any moment you could hear that, and then that's just it. I mean, that has to be unbearable to live. How do people deal with that?
Well, 90% of children under 18 can't control their bladder.
Oh, my God.
You know, we've seen this before. When Obama, during his drone war, and I was a big critic of it, I was the one that leaked the names of all the children and published an article at Alatea called Flying into the Abyss, John Brennan's drone war, and I published the names of all the children killed by Obama's drone war. But it was so aggressive that in parts of Pakistan, the children lost their hair. They would have no hair because the ever-present sound of drones and the fear. And it's much, 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 much worse in Gaza. And just to put it, when I went to Lahaina, and I was broadcasting for you guys live from Lahaina days after the fire, I made the mistake of bringing a tent and sleeping just outside of Lahaina because I didn't want to steal a bed from the displaced people at the local hotels. And so when I was in Honolulu, I picked up a tent on my way into Maui. And that was a real mistake because for months, my eyes were swollen, red, shut.
The ash.
My nose was just felt like, you know, lava pouring out my nose. And that was from this fire in Lahaina, which comparatively is small. We have the equivalent of over 13 Nagasaki bombs that have been dropped on.
You're talking about toxic chemicals and.
Yeah. You think of all the soldiers. I was in the infantry during the first Gulf War, and you think of all of the soldiers that got Gulf War syndrome.
Right.
From just the toxic hell that war leaves in its wake. Well, now we have families and children. That's why delivering these pop-up homes was important to us, that and that it had a floor to it, that we in some way protected them from the poison around them.
Yeah. God, it really is just unimaginable, and it's so horrifying knowing that it's our tax dollars that are paying for it, and it's our sort of power as America that's giving Israel the cover to carry this out. I mean, it really is like beyond anything, especially, I mean, you look at history and you see World War II and you see Nazis committing atrocities, and then the world comes together and opposes them, and then you're watching similar atrocities take place on live video on TikTok. And it just goes on for 2 years and nobody can seem to stop them. So what can we do to stop this? Because again, this article is from today. This is January 6, 2026. Israel pushes ahead with vast illegal settlement in heart of West Bank. Israel is moving to start a construction on a vast illegal settlement in the heart of the West Bank designed to, quote, bury the idea of a Palestinian state. The Israeli Land Authority in mid-December quietly posted for a tender for construction of 3,401 homes in the E1 project that will effectively sever north and south of the occupied West Bank for Palestinians and further cut off East Jerusalem. So, I mean, it seems like Trump came in and sort of made them stop in Gaza, although they're not stopping in Gaza. They're still
killing kids
Gaza.
Today. Yeah.
They're literally killing kids every single day, and they're building military outposts inside Gaza with this so-called yellow line that was also not supposed to be allowed under the ceasefire agreement. But it seems like since they were sort of forced to stop focusing entirely on Gaza, they went, okay, then we'll focus on the West Bank instead. And that's when all the West Bank settlements really started to explode. And we can have, clip 29 here roll as B-roll, just so you can see some of the new West Bank settlements that are cropping up all over the place. So
this is unbelievable. And for each of these settlements comes checkpoints, divided land, confiscated land, increased violence, increased abuse. Takes hours to get your kids to and from school. You never know when checkpoints are going to be open or checkpoints are going to be closed. And whenever they add new settlements, then that means that Palestinian land near those settlements becomes vulnerable. And so what they're trying to do, it's ecclesiacide. They're trying to remove the ancient Christian communities. So, you know, this is why just being on your show means a lot to me. If we can stop the Shtema settlement, if President Trump is sincere that he wants to preserve these Christian communities and protect Christian communities from violence, well, the easiest places to start would be Turkey, India, right, and Israel. Why don't our allies stop murdering Christians and stop encouraging the slaughter, murder, and displacement of Christians? You know, let's see Artsakh returned to the Armenian community.
Right.
I'd love to see that. Let's see in East Jerusalem, the Armenian quarter, the abuses stop and the property returned and the ceasing the confiscation of property. Let's see these settlements in Tebe around the outskirts of Bethlehem and Bet-Zohar and Shepherd's Field rolled back. Let's see a real commitment to protecting these ancient Christian communities. And by the way, for those Christian Zionists out there that have their silly, you know, Ted Cruz throwaway lines on why they support this ethnic cleansing or genocide, is because the book of Genesis tells them to. The Palestinian Christians are the descendants of the Jews that accepted Jesus.
Right.
They're literally the descendants of the families that were in the upper room in the book of Acts. By the way, one of the languages a Christian leader said to me, Jason, they're not really Christians, they're Arabs. The second tribe to convert after the Jews were Arabs.
Right.
In the upper room in the book of Acts, one of the languages that they were speaking was what? Arabic.
Right.
So there have been Arabic-speaking Christians since the church was founded at Pentecost.
Right.
And they weren't speaking French or English, but they were speaking Arabic. So this idea that they don't count as Christians because of their ethnicity is pernicious. And this is the real danger of Zionism. I think the real danger of Zionism is it unravels the gospel of Jesus Christ, which teaches us to see everybody, regardless of ethnicity, as our brothers and sisters. And something that I really impresses me about the Palestinian community is they never use their genetic link to the land or their genetic link to the Jews at the time of Jesus to say why they should stay there. And I've asked them, why don't you use this? This is a powerful appeal to Christians.
Right.
And they say, well, because we've had ethnicity weaponized against us, and we don't want to weaponize our ethnicity and deploy it against Jews. By the way, 50% of the Jews in Israel are indigenous to the region, right?
Right.
Worse. So that's something that I find commendable. And I really have, I wrote an article in the early weeks of the war called Help, I'm an Anti-Palestinian Bigot. Because as we were evacuating the wounded and I was interviewing them in Cairo, I became aware of how prejudiced I had been, even though I was serving the Palestinian people, that I had deep-seated prejudice.
Mm.
That, you know, they wouldn't let their women be educated, that they were all anti-Semitic. I had all this kind of nonsense in my head. And so I wrote this article, Help, I'm an anti-Palestinian bigot. What I've come to just really completely be charmed, become completely charmed by the Palestinian people. And it's just a mystery to me how they can weather such abuse with such dignity. And this is what I've come to understand. As Christians, we believe that grace builds upon our nature. It doesn't change our nature, but it builds upon it. And it builds upon the nature of us as individuals. But if we're a Christian family, it builds upon us as families. If we're a Christian country, it builds upon us as a country. The Palestinian Christian community, grace has been building upon the nature of that community for 2,000 years.
Right. Man, and again, it's just, it's so bizarre that they existed. I mean, I did a tweet about it, and I was going to try to find the exact numbers. But, here, 50,000 Palestinian Christians live in the West Bank. Bethlehem was 85% Christian in 1948. Now it's down to just 10%. And this was in response to Mike Johnson saying basically West Bank was promised to the Jewish people.
He went to the West Bank and met with the perpetrators of ethnic cleansing and genocide. This is a guy that we were friends. Like this guy, helped really promote Mike Johnson, Speaker Johnson, a film I was involved with. I have every reason to like this guy, but it's just unbelievable.
It's so crazy.
And then you have to ask yourself, are they propagandized? Is it fear? Is it money? Is it power? And, I think when you look at someone like Mike Huckabee, in fact, when President Trump, I didn't want to go to the inauguration. I wanted to spend that time in Gaza. So I went to the region. They wouldn't let me in Gaza. So I spent last year during the inauguration, I was actually, again, in the West Bank. I was in Beit Sahur in Bethlehem, spending time with the Christian communities there, and then texting all my friends at the inauguration, hey, here are pictures of the Christian community, don't forget them. And I was telling the Palestinian Christian community, don't fear Mike Huckabee. I know that Mike Huckabee is a Christian Zionist. In fact, he would do a tours of Israel where he would play one of my movies on the tour bus.
Wow.
It was on the Holocaust. He would play it on his tour bus in Israel, but also when he would do it as tours of Auschwitz. And I said, Mike Huckabee is a godly man. He's a good man. He's a man better than me. He's a Christian. He's a better Christian than me. And when he gets the security briefings, when he gets the intel, when it's not just the 700 Club that he's watching, right? When he sees the truth, we can count on Mike Huckabee. You've seen him early on try to waver. He even criticized a lot of the settler violence early on. But then something just happened and he snapped. And he became a hardliner. Then he meets with this former disgraced spy.
Pollard, yeah.
He meets with Pollard. And it's just beyond the pale.
Yeah.
And Mike Huckabee, as a Catholic, as a Catholic, I've been offended that his indifference or Speaker Mike Johnson from Louisiana of all places. I know he's from Baptist part of Louisiana, but from Louisiana, very Catholic state.
Right.
So indifferent. Maybe they're not your ecclesial community. Maybe you're evangelical Christian. And you saw on one of the guys from Babylon Bee tweeted out, I hate to break this to people, but the Christians in Gaza aren't really Christians. What he meant was that they were Orthodox and Catholic.
Right.
They're from the first century apostolic community. They've been there for 2,000 years. And this knucklehead from the Babylon Bee says they're not real Christians, denying their identity, their dignity, and their religion. Who are you?
Right.
Are you really a Christian, buddy? So I think that we have a real chance here because Harrison, they try to say, look at Nigeria. By the way, most of my work is not in Gaza. It's in Nigeria.
Mm.
9 out of 10 Christians murdered this year will be murdered in Nigeria.
Right.
And so I was excited. I told my team, let's start, let's put our sales up and catch this enthusiasm.
Because people were starting to talk
about
it.
Israeli lobby is using, when you have like Bill Maher and Laura Loomer,
right.
Like, oh my gosh, they're killing Christians in Nigeria. Look at the dangling car keys. Now look at Venezuela. Don't look at Gaza. Don't look at Artsakh. Don't look in India. Don't look there. No. Just, look. Boko Haram. That's right. All I want you to know.
If you're not talking about that, then you're not sincere, and we don't have to listen to you about anything.
And by the way, the easiest Christian persecution, that's the most challenging, actually. Nigeria is a huge country, a very complex. And we don't want to cause more harm than good, which is something, as you said in the beginning of the show, we do all the time.
Mm.
So it's like, listen, okay, you want to stop Christian persecution? This is easy. India.
Yeah.
We have a lot of leverage over India. The Hindu nationalists must stop murdering and beating and robbing Christians, weaponizing the law with their anti-conversion laws. We must be very clear. that this is an important issue to us as conservatives and Christians. Also, Artsakh, Turkey, Israel, Azerbaijan, give the Armenians their land back. And Israel, stop. Listen to President Trump. Stop the settlements.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many places where Christianity is under attack around the entire world, not least of which here in America and in Europe as well. We saw the church burnings over New Year's Eve. I mean, obviously, Christianity is under concerted attack worldwide. And I'm so frustrated at the fact that Christians can't come together to protect Christians overseas, whether it's in Nigeria, whether it's in Artsakh or Israel. It's like, here we are, the most powerful country in the world. We're a Christian country. Can we not go help these Christians just on the basis that they're Christians and they need our help? And why is all of that energy, all of that motive from the Christian community in America, it's all siphoned towards Israel and its support for Israel, even though they're the ones who are driving out Christians in their homelands? It is so inverted, and it's like we could take that same level of energy and actually protect Christians around the world. We could end all of these genocidal, you know, activity everywhere in the world.
And when you're protecting Christians, you're also protecting other ethnic and religious minorities. You know, at the Vulnerable People Project, we don't just serve the Christian community. We serve vulnerable communities through and with the local Christian community. They're our main partners. Even right. when we were operating in Afghanistan, a lot of my main partners were Christians. And when we were bringing, we have a program called Coal for Christmas, where we bring coal in the winter to Christian families.
Right.
And also the widows and orphans of our allies who were killed in action. But if we went into a village and we knew that 20% of the village was Christian, we wouldn't just put coal.
Right.
And we would literally go on Christmas. You know, we had to go 28 miles at one point with, you know, donkeys carrying wow. All this coal for every family, coal and food. And, but every family was blessed. You know, when Christians are safe, their neighbors are safe. Right. The Hindu nationalists are not only killing, Christians, they're killing other religious minorities and they're killing Muslims too. You know, in Iraq, they weren't just killing the Christians, they were killing the Yazidis and the Kakai and others too.
Same thing happening in Syria right now.
And the same thing, yes, exactly. And so, you know, we are a Christian organization. I founded it actually in 2002, trying to get the pro-life movement to speak. The idea was, I've been very active in the pro-life movement. I'd worked for Pat Buchanan when he ran for president, and I thought, the pro-life movement needs to speak up against this desire to invade Iraq. If we topple Saddam, it'll break the secular equilibrium. It's going to lead to genocides. Now, obviously, we failed to wake people up, but that's exactly what happened. And we're seeing it, you know, happen again now in Syria. I mean, we have the artist formerly known as Jolani,
yeah.
Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and we're told he's a good guy.
And meanwhile, quote, they want to cleanse Syria of Christians. The community speaks of betrayal, terror, and exile. On Christmas morning in Damascus, the sound of church bells ring hollow against a backdrop of fear. A city once proud of its religious mosaic now live in shadows of themselves, cautious, silence, and increasingly absent.
So, Harrison, those of us that oppose the toppling of Assad, which I did from the very beginning and through to the very end, you know, we're called, you don't care about the people of Syria. You know, just like when I was in Ukraine very early on, we were evacuating women and children and orphans to the West, and we were setting up an insulin distribution system. But at the same time, I was calling for an immediate ceasefire and end this war. And people were like, you don't love the Ukrainian people. No, I love the Ukrainian people. Stop
That's
the war.
Why you want to stop them being the killed. War. I know.
It's yeah. So no, it is crazy that, you know, I actually care about these people. I go there. I know them. I love them. It was great to bring my sons with me to the West Bank because they could see my strong, deep relationships with so many people. Some going back, you know, one of my friends there, we've been friends for over 2 decades. And so it was really great for my children to see this. We were at church this Sunday after coming back from the Holy Land, and Bethlehem was in one of the readings, and I elbowed my son, and I'm like, right. You're that different now, don't you?
Right, right.
Now that you know they have a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Right.
Right. It's like they're real people. Their kids right, ride bicycles and play basketball and have basketball tournaments.
Yeah.
And the boys like girls and the girls like boys. And it's just they're normal people. And then, you know, my sons and I went and I got a tattoo, Ecclesiastes 4:1, in Bethlehem, which is I looked all over the world and all I see is oppression. And on the side of the oppressor is power. On the side of the oppressed, there is no one. And I think the vocation of the Christian is to stand with the oppressed. And that's it. Whether they're Jew, whether they're Yazidi, whether they're a Muslim, Palestinian, whether they're a Muslim Uyghur, this is the vocation of the Christian. This is actually how we share the love of Jesus Christ. We kiss lepers. We stand next to a woman caught in the act of adultery. This is what we do. This is what it is to be a Christian in the world. But if we cannot stand with the Palestinian Christian community, Because we have all been indoctrinated, all of us. If I say Palestinian, you say what? Don't even say it, because we've been so inculcated with bigotry.
Right.
And I wish everyone could go to the West Bank and go this Easter. Go. And don't take one of these tours, you know, when you cross over, they say, oh, it's dangerous now. It is so safe.
Right.
My kids were laughing because my wife is always like, you know, when I leave, she gets so nervous. And I'm
yeah,
like,
I would too. Yeah,
like, what are
sure.
you nervous about? It's safer than our neighborhood. I worry about you guys. You know, a young woman who runs one of our shelters in Juarez for children, she was like crying, you know, when I'm there and I'm like, look, you're in the most dangerous city on the planet Earth.
I gotta admit, I'd take Gaza over war pretty much anything.
Well, I'm eating Kentucky Fried Chicken in the West Bank.
Yeah.
You know, and, it's,
So what is our call to action, right? Because you've got, again, from January, this is published today, Israel pushes ahead with vast illegal settlements at the heart of the West Bank. Obviously, Trump doesn't want this, but isn't doing much to stop it. Meanwhile, the people that he's put in charge, like Huckabee and Johnson, are completely in favor of this and supporting it with everything they've got. Meanwhile, Christian leaders like, you know, Bishop Pizzaballa are saying this is horrible. I mean, they're trying to, you know, take the land that the Orthodox cathedrals are on. And I mean, it is relentless. So what can we do? I mean,
I want to ask two things. I ask two things?
Please.
One is on X right now, and I'm not a big X guy, you know, but I'm on X and I just posted, a post to Prime Minister Netanyahu to stop the new settlements surrounding the Christians. I think that's one thing I could ask. And if everyone could go to protectholylandchristians.com, protectholylandchristians.com, and help us, you know, and donate. We're trying to deliver firewood for the next 2 months to every Christian family in Gaza. We've already begun bringing firewood and food and potable water. We also ordered 3 mobile homes that are en route, one for each church and then one for the VPP staff. But we're really committed to making sure that this ancient Christian community is not cleansed from the Holy Land. This is something we cannot allow to happen. I have, friends that talked about how privileged they were as soldiers in Iraq to go to historic first century churches. And then I always have to break their heart and say, you know, that church is gone.
Right.
Those churches, ISIS destroyed those churches. Those churches are gone. And so now here we are. If we can't preserve a Christian community,
where Jesus was born,
in the midst of territory controlled by our greatest ally and our best friend and Prime Minister Netanyahu, has committed to protecting Christian communities around the world from violence. Now, I don't think he's going to help us in Nicaragua. I don't think he's going to help us in India or China. I think what he means is, maybe this will distract Americans enough so that we can get a war with Iran and we can get more war in Africa. And
I have the feeling.
And I want to go back to another thing just to show how this.
We're about to go to break. We can come back for 5 more minutes on the other side. We'll be right back, folks. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. I haven't plugged once today. I'll fix that on the other side. More with Jason Jones on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
So I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't know, and I'm going over there. You finance it. You paid for it. We're your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at TimPoliceware.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air, kind of do that. I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. 3 posters I designed, 2 I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King, Make No Peace with Evil, same Crusader King, and then Do Like That Still Image of Me, and it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy, in a tube, or you get it for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens before their hatch. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters, and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you'll be the ones to shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like a Star Trek Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.
All right, welcome back, folks. Second hour of the War Room is on. We got 5 more minutes with Jason Jones. You can follow him on X at Jason Jones VPP. And do us a favor and retweet his latest tweet to Netanyahu, because Netanyahu and Israel is pushing this idea that they will be the defenders of global Christianity from January 1st, JNS.org. Netanyahu pledges support for global Christian communities under Islamic threat. Meanwhile, they are genociding Christians in the West Bank as we speak. And I noticed in a comment to that tweet, somebody named Susie says, it's the Arabs cleansing the Christians from Bethlehem, actually. So Susie knows. She knows. I mean, you were just there. You know,
by the way, I had interviewed pastors and priests, Lutherans, evangelicals, Anglicans. I interviewed the Christian mayor of Ramallah. Ramallah is 80% Muslim. I interviewed the Christian mayor of Ramallah. I interviewed the Christian mayor of Bethlehem. Those will all be dropping soon. They all have a different story to tell, but no one wants to hear their story because it comes with a cost. Standing up to the state of Israel comes at a cost, whether you're on the political left or you're on the political right. But people need to maybe check the weather, because I think continuing to turn a blind eye on this ethnic cleansing and genocide is going to come at a cost. And people, you know, there's just the decadence and the insincerity on serving the persecuted church drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, what are you doing in Nigeria? And people would ask me that when I'd post on Gaza, and then I wouldn't even comment, but people would post a lot of my work in Nigeria. And they'd go, right. Well, what is he doing in India? Then they'd post what I'm doing in India. At the end of the day, they just want me to shut up.
They want to just try to discredit your very valid concerns by saying, oh, you're not allowed to talk about that unless you also talk about this.
You don't have to talk about everything.
Right.
I'm pro-life. I don't want everyone fighting to protect the child in the womb from the violence of abortion to drop what they're doing and advocate for Palestinians or Nigerians. But
we got a lot of problems.
We all have a lot of things to do. We all specialize in what we do. But at the Vulnerable People Project, this is our unique commitment to stand with communities outside of social concern facing ethnic cleansing, genocide, war. But you look at Sudan, just how insincere people are. They look at Nigeria. That lasted a week. It was just, don't look at Gaza. That's what they were saying. Okay, now let's go to Sudan. Sudan, you have the SAF, the Sudanese Armed Forces. Both sides are genocidal lunatics. There's not a good side to bet on. But Hameti, the Janjaweed, the Rapid Support Forces, have allied with the Christians, the SPLM North. And the SAF is slaughtering Christians. Well, who do you think the United States is backing in a war between two sides? One side is slaughtering Christians, and one side includes Christians, like the SPLM North. Israel and the United States is backing the SAF.
Right.
So again, you ask, what can we do? Let's stop the Shtema settlements. Let's stop the settlements outside of Bethlehem and Beth Zahor. Let's protect the Shepherd's Field. And then let's also say, hey, Netanyahu, President Trump, if you are really serious about protecting Christian communities, again, just talk to our allies.
Right.
Talk to Sudan. Talk to India. Talk to Turkey. Talk to Israel. Stop persecuting Christians.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to protect Christian communities, try the ones in your own country first, and that would be a great place to start. But, you know, obviously they're interested in weaponizing evangelicalism, and of course that's going to have terrible effects here politically as well, because they've sort of hijacked the Republican Party and are trying to fully take it over. So anybody that's against what Israel's doing is being told your only option is to go to the socialists and the Democrats. So we really have a tough road ahead of us as
which I don't think is fair, because I think the loudest, clearest, most level-headed and consistent voices for the Palestinians have come from the political right.
I agree.
And I see a lot of virtue signaling on the left, but not when push comes to shove, not a lot of risk-taking.
Yeah.
I see, like, with Tucker Carlson and you and others and Candace, they're taking real risks to advocate for the Palestinians. Where on the left, you see they're just kind of playing that game.
It's just sort of an outgrowth of their general anti-white.
They're for hatred. The Palestinians for the same reason most, a lot of this audience, you guys are for the conservative, for the Israelis. It's intersectionality. There's right wing and left wing intersectionality. But what we have to do,
we just want to save innocent people.
Yeah, we just want to protect children from being eviscerated by bombs paid for and made here in America.
Incredible stuff. Go to vulnerablepeopleproject.com, thejasonjonesshow.substack.com. Follow Jason Jones on X at Jason Jones VPP.
I'm funded by you, and I appreciate your support. Very humbly, thank you for your support, those that have. Those that haven't, what are you waiting for? Our information is bar none the best. The supplements are game-changing. The Methylene Blue, the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the widest selection of Patriot Apparel t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. But there's a deal going for a few more days where you buy any supplement and get a bottle of the Shilajit gummies or Atomic Defense Super Immune Booster free. You choose which free gift you want. That funds our operation, thealexjonesstore.com. I want to thank those that have stood with us. If you're going to buy anything, become a VIP. Just in your profile, $30 a month, cancel anytime, no charge. You get $40 every time you spend $30 to spend. So you make $10, you're going to buy anything, you should be a VIP. Then you get special deals, special offers, special sales on top of everything. Also, you get big discounts when you use the app for Android or for Apple at alexjonesapp.com. Just links you through to get the free apps right there. So it's the same shopping cart online. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I want to thank you all for your support.
And in downtown Dallas, the first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded.
Growing concern about a new and rare pneumonia-like virus.
あなたの心は戦場です。誰も信用しないでください。この世界は暗い秘密を持つ男たちによって支配されている。Charges
hanged himself with a bedsheet, his accusers vowing to get justice.
団子として攻撃する隙間を残さない反撃してください。
PSYOP Queen. PSYOP Anime. That is from one of my new favorite accounts on X, PSYOP Anime. We showed the video he did yesterday. I'm just, again, blown away by the fact that you can have a raid on Venezuela Sunday night, and by Monday morning, you have a fully realized dramatic reinterpretation with, you know, fully fledged action anime animation. It's just, it is wild, and I love seeing it. Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Really powerful first hour from Jason Jones about the real threats against Christianity, especially in the Middle East. And I really hope that this is somewhere that we can draw some attention and use some of the influence that we have. After all, this does work. In fact, what we'll talk about now is something that I've been talking about for a very long time. I need to stop saying that, but the problem is... I talk about stuff for years and nobody seems to care. And then all of a sudden everybody cares about it. And I have like this whole backlog of, you know, catalog to look back to. Diversity in the symphony, blind auditions. It is emblematic. It is a, like a metaphor for everything wrong with DEI. And I've explained it over and over, especially in context of like AI and how AI is being programmed. But this guy, who we'll show you the video in just a second, he was a top-notch, you know, orchestral, I think, clarinet player, I believe it is, and he was basically ousted from a symphony because he is a white guy. And this has been going on forever. I mean, they weren't exactly shy about this. They were writing articles about what a great thing it was that they were – and the cycle is hilarious. And actually – I got a retweet. I walked in today and Editor Reese was like, I see you got – a nod from the God King. I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, you don't know? You don't know you got the nod from the God King? It turns out Elon Musk retweeted me. So I think Bill Ackman retweeted me first. But it's basically this. A story that has stuck with me since it happened a few years ago. One, the New York Philharmonic is too white. So they institute blind auditions. But that backfires because even more white people get selected. So then they scrap the blind auditions and they start explicitly discriminating against white people. So here's the article, New York Times reverses policy on blind auditions. The paper's chief music critic, Anthony Tomasini, has called for blind auditions to be abolished because they impede the advance of diversity in orchestras. See, so what happens is you look at an orchestra and you see, wow, it's 90% white and Asian. Yet the population is only 60% white or Asian. It must be because it's racist. It must be. It's called the racism of the gaps. Phrase coined by Atheism is Unstoppable, but basically it says if there's a gap in achievement between races, the only thing you're allowed to consider as a the cause of that is racism. Oh, black people are sent to jail more because the police are racist. Black people don't do well on tests. That's because the tests are racist. Got to get rid of the tests. And this just happens over and over, diversity ad nauseum, as we put it. And so in order to correct from the imagined racism, they say, well, we'll just do blind auditions. That way those dirty racists, you know, the people that run the New York City Philharmonic, the classic KKK members, like, again, just the whole thing's retarded. But they say, you know, in order to defeat their racism, we'll do blind auditions. Ha! That'll trick them. They won't know who they're picking. They won't be able to pick their white friends anymore, right? So then you do a blind audition. You're judging entirely by the music and the music alone. They have no way of determining their, you know, decision on the basis of race, as pure as it can possibly be. What happens? More white people get chosen. More white people fill up. Instead of being 90, it's 95%. So instead of saying, okay, it wasn't racism that caused that initial gap, we were wrong about that, they say the racism is somehow so pervasive it even exists in blind auditions. We have to get rid of blind auditions. We have to overcome this racist gap, not by removing any possibility that it is racism by making blind auditions, but instead by putting into our selection process racist discrimination. Now we have a grading rubric and somebody's race will actually be applied to whether or not they're hired, meaning you're not getting the best instrument players. You're getting a high proportion of black instrument players, regardless of their quality, regardless of the comparative quality against white people or Asians or anybody else. And so where this really gets dangerous is when you imagine or when you understand that this exact same type of overcorrection is being embedded into AI. So AI, if you ask AI a question, and we've been covering this, it's a fascinating thing because AI is just a truth calculator. It's a truth machine. It wants to tell you the truth because that's what it's programmed to do. But then they have to go in and actually stop it from telling the truth. They have to go in and say, well, you're not allowed to, you know, understand this series of events. You're not allowed to understand the cause and effect. We have to come in and program you to assert that it's racism that's causing the difference. And so when that gets built into the AI, when they're trying to overcome perceived, imagined, illusionary racism by programming racism into the machine, you understand how this is a major problem, because then people are going to think that AI is just objectively giving you a response, objectively telling you what is true and what is not, when in reality, underneath the surface, hidden inside the code, is this pre-designed bias that's intended to overcome racism that never existed in the first place. You understand? And again, this has happened in real life before. One of the things that they did was early on when they were working with, you know, early AI machine learning models, they tasked it with determining whether or not prisoners were likely to reoffend. So, you know, they have bail hearings or parole hearings, and you sort of have to go on the person's word, and you don't really have a lot to go, okay, is this person reformed? Are they just putting on an act? Do we let them out or not? And you don't really know. So they try to bring AI and go, okay, let's just feed everything into the AI machine, and then it will sort of grade people on this rubric. It'll compare previous cases. All right, here's a bunch of people that reoffended. What were their characteristics? Here's a bunch of people that didn't reoffend. What are their characteristics? To inform you so you can use computer to help you better decide whether somebody is worthy of parole. When they did that to the computer, it determined overall, in general, on average, it was more likely to say a black person would reoffend than a white person. Now, it's a robot, you understand. It is a machine. It's like a calculator. But they came out and said, okay, the machine is racist. the machine, the robot, the calculator, it must be racist. So we have to go in and correct for that, because they're, again, just completely illusionary, hallucinatory view of the world is that everything should be equal. Why? Because they want it to be, because they assert that it is. It's ridiculous. Why would two groups of people ever be equal in anything? We're not. No two people are equal ever. No two groups. The groups of people are even that less equal. So why would you demand that you always have an equal outcome? Because they're communist, equalitarian psychos. That's why. Because they have a view of the world that is incompatible with reality. And so they're trying to force reality to fit their illusion rather than change their own mindset to comport with reality. They're dumb, evil, retarded people that are in control of our most important systems. It's not good. It's not good. Okay. So what we see with blind auditions, which do in effect, like you cannot say the blind auditions are racist. Like that's impossible. That can't be the case. So if you have blind auditions and more white people get chosen than black people, that's just because the white people in this instance were the more talented group. That's just how it is. They can't have that. They can't stand for that. Their goal is this imagined fake equality, which, and we can even get into that, because it's like, what are we talking about? It has to match the population of the city you're in or the country that you're in. Is it supposed to match the population of the world? I mean, what are we talking about here? It's all nonsense. It's all completely arbitrary. It's all just about hating and wanting to destroy white people at the end of the day. It's not that sophisticated. It's not that complicated. They just hate white people, okay? And they want to disadvantage white people, and they want less white people in the orchestra because white people bad. It's not that complicated. Let's go to this video of this gentleman. His name on X is Slim Zim. His name is James Zimmerman. And this story went fairly viral. I'm trying to scroll through. Clip 16 here. James Zimmerman, DEI, killed his career. And the reason I brought this up right now is because as of this morning, Carmeet Dillon and the DOJ has learned about this and says basically we're on it. We're on it. It's illegal to discriminate on the basis of race. The Trump administration has outlawed DEI, so you can't do this anymore. And this is one of the greatest things about the Trump administration. With all the complaints we have about them and all the criticisms that we levy at them on a daily basis, you cannot deny that they respond to the will of the people. When enough people show attention on something, the Trump administration understands we better deal with this. Now, sometimes that's just a matter of throwing us a bone that doesn't actually mean anything. Like when everybody was questioning Charlie Kirk's assassination and Kash Patel comes out and goes, don't worry, we're looking at all of it. Well, that was 3 months ago and we haven't heard a word about any of it since. So it wasn't really a truthful thing that he said, but he did have to respond, right? So when it comes to something like the West Bank settlements, this is something that if we combine and unify our voices and speak out against this and tag the Trumps and tag people in the Trump administration and have a unified singular message. And I like Jason Jones's idea. They're trying to build settlements in the shepherd's field. That is the field where the shepherds on Christmas Eve were visited by an angel and told to go see baby Jesus in Bethlehem, that Advent story. It's that field, that literal field that I've heard about every year for my entire life during Advent. Like, can we stop that? Can we all come together and start posting hourly about these new settlements, and particularly this settlement, and calling on the Trump administration to do something about this and let him know that we're not voting if that's not the case? I think that is a very admirable and good use of our time, of our ability to influence the Trump administration. I think that's something we can get behind, and this can be effective. We've seen it because people like this gentleman here now have the attention of the Trump administration and they're moving to help him. We need to weaponize that level of responsiveness to actually achieve big global goals. But let's watch this story that's gone viral recently with Mr. James Zimmerman. Let's watch.
My name's James Zimmerman. I'm a clarinet player. You may not have heard of me, but if you've been to Disney World or played video games or watched Netflix, you've heard my playing. I'm a session player in Nashville, and I also work in big tech. Before tech, I was principal clarinet of the Nashville Symphony for 12 years, but in 2020, I got canceled for resisting DEI. It's a long story, easy to Google if you feel like it. So last summer, I took the blind audition for principal clarinet of the Knoxville Symphony, practiced like a madman for 2 months, and won the audition unanimously. I was very pumped. Until 2 days later when their CEO called to tell me, we heard some things about your time in the Nashville Symphony and refused to give me the job, wouldn't communicate with me, and gave the job to my runner-up, an obvious DEI hire who's still in college. Which is not just uncool, it's illegal. So a couple weeks ago I sued them for a year's salary plus $25,000 to compensate me for the 100 hours I spent practicing for the audition they invited me to, with the understanding that they'd give me the job if I won. But more than that, I'm suing because these orchestras can't keep throwing out their best players to make room for diversity hires and putting race and politics above merit and skill. All this does is lower the quality of the music, alienate audiences, and turn the arts into politics. The Nashville Symphony got away with acting like this in 2020, but maybe the Knoxville Symphony shouldn't be able to in 2025. I wish I didn't have to do this. I was just looking to get back in the game, put 2020 behind me, and earn money for my kids' college doing what I love, but if I'm blacklisted, it's either push back against the people in charge or walk away. And if Knoxville thought I was walking away from this, they were sorely mistaken. Hopefully I'll win my lawsuit and make an example of the Knoxville Symphony, and orchestras will go back to hiring the best players the way they did before DEI ruined the business. It's either that or leftists keep running orchestras into the ground until they're gone completely, all in the name of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Give me a break. So follow me and see how the fight unfolds. I'll be doing some fundraising as well as posting clarinet clips and pictures of bread. Thanks for watching. Wish me luck.
So again, you know, it's great to see that this guy is getting a lot of attention and the Trump administration is now looking into this. Again, it would be nice if we didn't have to mount a whole social media campaign just to get them to enforce the basic laws that they literally ran on and then implemented. And we're seeing this everywhere. Like, DEI lost the debate, right? And it should have never even been a debate in the first place. It was always obvious from the beginning what this actually was. You can't defeat discrimination with more discrimination. That's ridiculous. And all you're doing is hampering yourself, your own organization. You're just not picking the best people. Like, we won this. We don't have to have this argument. We won this argument. We elected Trump in part on the basis that he would eliminate DEI, and he did. He eliminated it from the federal government. He issued orders to eliminate it from universities. Only the people that were subject to that order just ignored him. And we've been reporting on this the whole time. They were not shy about it. They would go, okay, we have to shut down our diversity and inclusion board now. So all the same people from that board are going to be on a new board called the Equality Board. It's not about diversity. It's about equality or whatever else. It's no longer the diversity board. Now it's the opportunity board. We'll call it an opportunity board. It'll do all the same stuff. We'll change the name. Technically, concede to the order, but actually everything is continuing at a pace. And like, they're getting away with that. As if that counts, as if that's fine, as if, you know, they can stick to the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. And again, they're getting away with this. And we have some videos to illustrate that. It's from Arizona State. So Arizona State University still has a diversity office. They just are lying about it. And this was a very funny gotcha moment, to be honest with you. We'll start with clip 15 here. We'll do clip 15, then we'll do clip 14. But this was the original undercover video. They later go revisit this professor and ask her about her statements. Here are the original statements. Let's go to clip 15 first.
We still have a diversity office. We still
really? Okay.
Yeah. We still have, the college has a diversity office. The college okay. has, we have, it's an idea, it's called the idea office, and so it's like inclusivity in course design.
Okay.
And promoting diversity. And
okay.
Equity. And so we still have that as part of our college.
And the idea department composes curriculum?
The idea office mm-hmm. is like it's a central office that gives faculty like a toolbox of how to include these items and these
okay.
pain points into your classes. Because
okay.
for a lot of faculty, it's not something that they're necessarily as
well.
You know, having conversations about race and having conversations about discrimination and having, you know, those are not conversations that a lot of people are really very comfortable
with. You know? Yeah, they're not very comfortable with being discriminated against. It's really, they're weird like that. Not comfortable having these conversations. Let's go to clip 14 here. Again, undercover. So you just heard her there. We still have an Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. It's called the IDEA Office. See, and it's not DEI, it's IDEA. See, it's completely different. They still do exactly the same thing. They still are flagrantly violating federal law, but, you know, with a wink and a nod. So I guess it's okay. Let's go to clip 14 now.
Things of that sort. So it's there, but I think that you're not going to find very many programs that are going to broadcast it the way it was before, because that the funding for universities, especially state-run universities like ASU, you know, it's really tied to funding. And, you know, if you have federal funds that are withheld, it really makes a big impact. So the curriculum is there still. It's just not, it's not as broadcast as it was before.
Yeah, it's not as broadcast as it was before. See, we're still doing it. We're just lying about it now. See how that works? See, we still have a DEI office, still does all the DEI stuff. We just call it something else and we're quiet about what we're doing, because if they knew what we were doing, we'd lose federal funding. So that was an admission of guilt. Arizona State University should be completely cut off from federal funding until they can prove that they have actually disbanded these offices and actually ended these practices. Now, this is where the deception meets reality, because that woman who was just caught on hidden camera admitting, yes, DEI is still in effect. Yes, we still do it. We're just being dishonest about it. She was then confronted by this and lies even more. Let's go to clip number 12 now. Arizona State University professor caught bragging about secretly pushing DEI gets confronted about that fact.
Your department was doing DEI in defiance of the federal executive order. Is that true?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, is this you on the video right here?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Right here, lady. Here's the video of you doing it. What do you mean you don't have any idea what you're doing? These people are the most abject, dishonest liars the world's ever seen. Let's watch another. Clip 13 here. Same journalist confronting that same professor. They're on video admitting the DEI is in office. How do you think she responds when she's confronted with her saying verbatim that they still practice DEI and up in flagrant violation of the federal orders in secret by lying about it? Let's see what she says.
You were explaining to our investigator that you're discontinuing things how they were done previously, maybe just changing some of the names, nothing more. You don't call the diversity office, you change the names. Is that true?
I have no idea. You'll have to talk to our...
I have no idea. You'll have to talk to our director. Scum. Scum, guys. We're just surrounded by scum. And I'm going to get more into this on the other side, because, again, this is another thing that I've talked about forever. I swear, we just need phrases to define this stuff, because then we can identify it and define it and talk about it. But it's the idea that the right wing is always just assumed to be evil. They're just where it's just like assumed that anything that we support has to have some sort of evil ulterior motive. Like, the best example recently is like the Somali fraud. It's like, guys, they stole $100 billion from you, and the left just won't even listen because there's like, oh, you're just racist. Oh, you just must be racist, and so you've made this up. Like, they will not. I mean, it's a deliberate strategy they have where they say, we will not confront or entertain or deal with your assertions by just saying you're right wing so we don't have to. And so true things just go completely unaddressed because the right wing is not allowed to have legitimate concerns about anything. Everything has to be some sort of ulterior motive, even though we're constantly right about everything and proven right about everything. I'm going to get into that on the other side. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. We have some incredible new products and some incredible new combo products, like the Blue Tallow, Bovine Blue Tallow on thealexjonesstore.com is a new combination of our methylene blue and our beef tallow, and it's a skincare regimen. Remember I was saying, I mean, tallow is one of the most popular skincare ingredients, and we have the best on the market. Get your Blue Tallow today at thealexjonesstore.com. And there are some massive sales. I'm telling you, folks, there are some sales that I'm not even sure I should tell you about. I think it might be a mistake that we made. I'm not even kidding. I will tell you about it, but, like, we're kind of losing a lot of money with it. I'll tell you on the other side.
I'm funded by you, and I appreciate your support very humbly. Thank you for your support, those that have. Those that have it, what are you waiting for? Our information is bar none the best. The supplements are game-changing. The Methylene Blue, the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the widest selection of Patriot Apparel t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. But there's a deal going for a few more days where you buy any supplement and get a bottle of the Shilajit gummies or Atomic Defense Super Immune Booster free. You choose which free gift you want. That funds our operation at thealexjonesstore.com. I want to thank those that have stood with us. If you're going to buy anything, become a VIP. Just in your profile, $30 a month, cancel any time, no charge. You get $40 every time you spend $30 to spend. So you make $10 if you're going to buy anything, you should be a VIP. You get special deals, special offers, special sales on top of everything. Also, you get big discounts when you use the app for Android or for Apple at alexjonesapp.com. Just links you through to get the free apps right there. So it's the same shopping cart online. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I want to thank you all for your support.
People can use this as a teaching moment. That, you know, I see a lot of people out there who think they can imitate Alex Jones, and they have never understood the amount of work that goes in to the detailed reports that you do. But the second part is, okay, if you're out there and you want to be Alex Jones or replicate Alex Jones, Alex teaches you the way to do it. Just pay attention. One is learn history. Understand history. Understand what templates to look for. Once you understand that, you understand what the play is going to look like. And then you're just looking for who to cast in what roles, because you understand the broader course of history, how these things tend to operate, how assassinations tend to occur, how cover-ups tend to happen, how false flags occur, how staged events occur, how also could the various forms of COINTELPRO type psyops to infiltrate dissident movements to distract them from the real conspiracy into fake conspiracy in order to feed a fake conspiracies into people who otherwise would be investigating the real conspiracy. Also to act as a discrediting agent. So learn the methodologies, learn how to look at how to review sources, how to understand the psychology of the participants involved. Once you understand that, you can be much more accurate and predictive at what took place with more explanatory power and more predictive capacity. And that's what Alex does, is massive amounts of work that starts with understanding history.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalists. Get ultra-methylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. We still have a lot to talk about on today's episode of The War Room. Just quickly here, you know, finishing off, since I saw a lot of people mentioning this. Jeremy Kaufman, allow me to share one of my favorite paragraphs. Left-wing authoritarians cannot perceive of their authoritarianism. Conservative Americans who scored high on authoritarian questionnaire had no problem saying, yes, I am authoritarian. But liberals were a different thing entirely. Not only were liberal authoritarians less likely than conservatives to accurately identify themselves as authoritarian, when they were, in fact, authoritarian, but there was actually a negative correlation between left-wing authoritarianism, the reality, and liberals' willingness to identify as authoritarian, their own perception. That means the more authoritarian liberals are, the less they believe they are authoritarian. Isn't that interesting? In other words, the more liberals want to control your life, want to dictate what you are and are not allowed to believe, want to dictate what you are and are not allowed to purchase or support or enjoy, the more they think they're fighting for freedom. The right wing has no illusions about this. The right wing says, you know, in this case, I am authoritarian, right? I want, you know, the state to do this. That's an authoritarian position. Yeah, I'm authoritarian. The liberals go, I want the state to crush my enemies, but I'm not authoritarian. I'm the loving liberal one. The point is they're insane. The point is that they have cognitive dissonance that seeps through their every pore. They are waterlogged by their own hypocrisy. It truly is incredible. And it goes down to things like this. I think this is definitely true. This is what Wayne X says in response to this user named Esther Zelda. She says, so this left-wing person says, this is unilateral because Republicans support policies that are malicious. Deep down, even Republicans know that, which is why they're okay associating with Democrats. They know Democrats don't have malicious policies, even for all their public whining about it. All right, so that's the perspective of most liberals, is Republicans support policies that are malicious. Deep down, even Republicans know that. Because remember, we can't actually believe anything, right? When we say, hey, these illegal immigrants are driving up our home prices, making it unaffordable for, you know, a young person to buy a home, making it that much more difficult to start a family, like this is a really bad thing. In addition to all the other things about illegal immigration that just really disadvantage the native people. And liberals, they don't hear any of that. All they hear is like the adults from the Charlie Brown cartoons. They just hear, wah, 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 I hate brown people. Wah, 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 wah. Like that's all they interpret. They can't possibly actually try to understand where we're coming from or have any empathy for the people actually, you know, subjected to tyrannical oppression. Because they think they're the good guys. They don't have to care about what we say or what we believe because we've been slandered as bad guys. We are the bad guys, so therefore everything we say, even if they think it's good, it must be some sort of ulterior motive. We don't actually care about having an affordable housing market. We don't actually care about, you know, our kids going to safe schools. No, it's just we just want to be racist everywhere, and we're just coming up with excuses for it, right? It's this constant, you know, scanner darkly that they see through. And of course, this is in response to that, Wayne at X Wayne X, I think it's definitely true that a lot of people feel this way, that Republicans are malicious, whereas Democrats are just misguided, bleeding hearts. This is a PR problem for sure, but it does not accurately reflect reality. Liberals are in fact full of hatred. They resent the rich, the successful, they hate their own country, they're full of racial animosity, and they really, truly, legitimately, no joke, think that they're better than you. And as the poll demonstrates, which is of course its own brand of malice. And he responds with a bunch of screenshots of this Sia Weaver woman, who is now, you know, one of Ma'am Donnie's lieutenants, where she says all these horrible things, right? I also endorse a no more white men in the office platform. KKK are a violent Christian group, and keep us all safe on this busy travel day, Delta, kick all the white people in Christmas outfits off planes. Really needing to repress the desire for revenge right now. I wish I believed in God so I could believe that all men who take credit for women's work and all white men who take credit for the work of women in color would one day burn. Like, these people are just literally seething in hatred. Impoverish the white middle class. Home ownership is racist. Impoverish the white middle class. Home ownership is racist. These people are not motivated by anything good. They're just hateful idiots. They've somehow convinced themselves that they're the good guys, but they're not, so we don't have to treat them like they're the good guys. They're evil. They're the evil ones. They actually believe the things that they project onto us, which I remind you is why they projected onto us. Remember, they have no theory of mind for conservatives. That's why they can't conceive of what we believe. They cannot have empathy with us when we say we don't like that our neighborhoods are unrecognizable. They have no theory of mind for us. All they think is that we're racist, so they don't have to listen to us. They're the good guys. We're the bad ones, because in their mind, they have that mindset. They have this vicious, hateful, winner-take-all, dog-eat-dog streak of just inhumanity that they project on the rest of us as if we are party to them in this just blatant deception about their fundamental beliefs. No, we actually say what we believe. We actually have the evidence to back up what we say. And it's all very simple. Look at this ghoul. It's like, now it's time to tap that sign. Tap the sign that says communism is nothing but, like, basically ugly, deformed freaks who hate beauty and want to tear it down. Like, that's it. At the heart of it, it's just politicized resentment. That's it at the end of the day. It's like the video we played on the show yesterday, where, you know, during New Year's, or I guess it was Friday, during New Year's celebrations in France, you have all these socialist lefties with laser pointers trying to blind the people who have balconies who can see the fireworks from their nice balcony. Like, these people can't, the people on the ground can't get to the balcony. Like, it's not like it's being stolen from them. They're just mad that somebody else has something they don't. Those people have a nice apartment where they have a nice view of the fireworks, and so they have to be punished. It has to be destroyed for them. It would never enter into their mind to be like, hey, you know, those people have something really nice. I'd like that one day too. I'm glad for them that they have that, even though I don't. I have no animosity towards somebody who has something I don't have. They didn't steal it from me. Communism is simply the political expression of biological reality. It's a bunch of ugly, stupid, jealous, vindictive, envious freaks that want to tear you down because that's easier than building anything else up. These people are sick. It goes even deeper than that because they are able to weaponize this racial envy, weaponize the racism that lies at the very center, the heart of the liberal coalition is entirely about hating white people, right? It's obvious from everything that they say. And that really informs, like, everything about what they think. And so you have this racial animus, you have this racial envy. And so you weaponize that by going, well, things that are white, they don't say it like this, but what they're saying in effect is, things that are white are things that make you strong and independent, right? Home ownership, that's a white thing. Free speech, oh, you mean white supremacy, right? I mean, literally, you can go through, like, the Bill of Rights. You can go through all of the things that make you protected against coercion or influence, right? We talk about this all the time. What are the things that make a person mentally strong? Having a family is, like, the number one thing. Because when you have a family that's tight, that loves each other unconditionally, then you have nothing to fear from the outside world. I can go out and say whatever I want. I can offend whoever I want, knowing that I still have my family, that nobody will take that away from me. That's a safety net for whatever happens socially. Okay? Obviously, having money makes people freer than not having money, right? Having generational wealth can obviously free you up to pursue your own goals, to not be having to live paycheck to paycheck. Home ownership, having equity, paying into something, a savings store that you can then, you know, draw upon later. That makes you free. That makes you independent. They're trying to get rid of that. So they take the racial animus against white people and transmogrify it into hatred of the things that make you strong, independent, and not a slave. So if they can demonize white people, in effect, what they're doing is demonizing all the things that white people came up with, like human rights and individualism, not collective responsibility, and, you know, freedom of ownership and freedom of conscience and freedom of speech and all these things. They demonize by associating it with whiteness, which they very effectively cause hatred over, because there's already this underlying simmering racial resentment that they can draw upon and activate and weaponize. Hope you understand all that. And it's not a coincidence that the very same people that Mamdani is bringing into his administration, we're talking about getting rid of private ownership, are also the people whose Twitters are replete with hatred of white people. It's not really that complicated. Let's go to some of these videos. We can go to clip number eight, nine here. This is Sia Weaver, the woman that we just read. She hates white people. She wants white people to feel hateful and defeated. And here she is talking about private ownership of your home being outdated. So they're going to use the government to seize private property. It's the first shots in a communist revolution. Here's Sia Weaver.
I think the reality is that for centuries, we've really treated property as an individualized good and not a collective good. And we are going to transitioning to treating it as a collective good and towards a model of shared equity will require that we think about it differently. And it will mean that families, especially white families, but some POC families who are homeowners as well, are going to have a different relationship to property than the one that we currently have.
Yeah, they're going to steal your property. The relationship with property that we have now is that you can buy property and then you own it. And that's, they're going to have to change that. They're going to take that away. Here she is again. This is New York City's new tenant director saying that people like home ownership because they like control, which is rooted in a racist and classist society. Now she's telling the truth here, just from an inverted perspective. Let's watch the next clip. Next clip on the list, clip 10.
Democratically controlled public housing is really important. And that's why when Raquel is talking about the communities and that she's describing, that, you know, that's a created community where the people who are living there are like setting the agenda. And so, you know, people like home ownership because they like control, and that's been perverted by like deep racism and deep classism in our society. So like we have to not have a racist and classist society. And so that's like something we need to think about like deeply. It's about, to me, it's about control. And why rent control is really important is because rent control alters the power dynamic between renters and who owns the building. And
yeah, it's about control. It's about control. And she's right. It is about control. When you own a house, you control it. She wants to take that control away from you. That's what it's about. She's right. She's absolutely right. And she's letting you know that right now. Is that when you own a home, you're in control. She wants to be in control, so you aren't allowed to own a home anymore. I mean, this is the death of the world as we know it. Like, this is the warning bells of the communist takeover. I mean, it's almost, I mean, what do we do about this? Because these people aren't secretive about this. They're open about it. And there's kind of this thing where, you know, if a Democrat is open about what they intend to do and then they get elected and they start to do it, it's like, well, what are you going to say? Like, we've moved on. Because you remember, we broke this story a few years ago, and it was around a city council election in Austin. And the city councilman, Jimmy Flanagan, was a socialist guy, and his campaign manager was like a well-known like Antifa communist agitator. And people were getting mad at Jimmy Flanagan as he was running for city council and saying, why is he talking about private property? And I, you know, we want a socialist in charge. And so the campaign manager in these private groups goes, guys, if we say what we're going to do, nobody would vote for us, right? If we were to come out and say we're socialist and we want to destroy private property, nobody would vote for us. So we're going to say these things, but trust us, guys, I'm the one in charge. Like, I'm the one doing things behind the scenes. So vote for this guy, even though he says he's not a socialist. We'll enact socialist policies once we're in office. It's just we can't talk about them now because nobody would vote for them, right? So that's like a fundamental betrayal of democracy itself, a fundamental betrayal of the relationship between the voters and the people in office. When the people in office or their, you know, lieutenants are saying, we're lying, okay? Don't worry, guys. Don't worry, my radical friends. We're lying about being centrist. Once we're in office, we'll really, you know, be socialist. That was like 5 years ago. Things have changed since then. They don't need to hide it anymore. They're just saying it, and people are still voting for them. So what do we do at this point? It's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair to the people who didn't vote for this and have, you know, work towards purchasing their own home, that this ugly weirdo gets to come in and take it from them because she has some nonsensical ideas that have been defunct and proven wrong 100 years ago. It's like, what do we do about this? I don't know, but I think, you know, Carlin Borishenko had some interesting responses to this. Friend of the show at Dr. Carlin B on X, you know, in response to my tweet, says, thank you, whiteness means capitalism equals private property ownership. Black people can be white if they own property. That's the vocabulary at play here when they're talking about this. When they say, like, yeah, white people are going to be affected, that's because, like, even the POCs, as they put it, right, even the people of color that own homes, yeah, you're going to be screwed over too. We don't actually care about that. We just want to destroy private property. That's the vocabulary that they're using. She goes on, guys, I can't correct every conservative on here who doesn't understand that whiteness means capitalism. They have no desire to defeat the left. It's only about advancing their BS talking points. I have to focus on people who actually care. But I think that's very interesting. Whiteness means capitalism to them. It also means whiteness. Like, I think they also just hate white people in general. But it's all predicated on this sort of transitive property of whiteness that goes, whiteness is bad. Whiteness is defined by things that make you free. Therefore, freedom is bad. Like, it's pretty simple, actually, at the end of the day. As Matthew Schmitz says on X, in 2016, Mamdani's director of appointments wrote, quote, it's important that white people feel defeated. In 2018, his housing advisor wrote, impoverish the white middle class. Mamdani's own platform called for raising taxes on, quote, richer and whiter neighborhoods. Okay, so they just hate white people. Again, not that complicated. Really not that complicated at all. But important to understand, and evil and vicious and racist and ugly. What are we talking about? I'm sorry, what are we talking about again? So that's what's happening in New York is these scumbags are getting into office, and it's going to go horribly for a little while. Sorry to tell you. We have a lot to get into. You know, we haven't even talked about this, and we really need to get to it because it broke, I think, during Alex's show, so he wasn't even able to comment on it. I'd be surprised if he hasn't released a report on this anyway. The UK, France, Germany, and several other European countries today signed an agreement to provide a permanent international defense force for Ukraine. So the push towards World War III is not only not slowing down, it is in fact speeding up. And despite England, France, and Germany being themselves in a state of absolute siege, of invasion, the likes of which those countries have never seen before, they want to send battalions of soldiers to Ukraine to continue to fight against Russia forever, I guess. And this is part of the frustration I understand from Alex and that I share with Alex, that we spent a lot on the show today talking about Israel, talking about, you know, Christians in the Middle East. The Ukraine war is maybe the most evil thing going on in the world right now. It is unspeakably evil what is being done to Ukraine, how flagrant their behavior is, how at this point, Ukraine is not anything but a highly funded death camp, essentially. UK and France agreed to deploy forces to Ukraine in the event of a peace deal. Starmer and Macron signed declaration of intent following Paris meeting. And the Chancellor of Germany has gotten in on this as well. We've got a few videos about this, and some other videos to put it in context as well. Do we have the video of Starmer talking about this? Because Keir Starmer has come out. All right, let's go to Keir Starmer here, and then we'll show another video of the real war that the UK should be fighting. But here's Starmer saying that this war in Ukraine is never going to end and only going to get worse. Let's watch.
Today, we signed a declaration of intent on the deployment of forces to Ukraine in the event of a peace deal. This is a vital part of our ironclad commitment to stand with Ukraine for the long term. It paves the way for the legal framework under which British, French, and partner forces could operate on Ukrainian soil, securing Ukraine's skies and seas, and regenerating Ukraine's armed forces for the future. We discussed these issues in detail today, and so I can say that following a ceasefire, the UK and France will establish military hubs across Ukraine and build protected facilities for weapons and military equipment to support Ukraine's defensive needs. And with our coalition partners, we've also agreed significant further steps. First, that we will participate in US-led monitoring and verification of any ceasefire. Second, we will support the long-time provision of armaments for Ukraine's defence. And third, we will work towards binding commitments to support Ukraine in the case of a future armed attack by Russia. This is all about building the practical foundations on which peace would rest.
Okay, so a permanent international security force in Ukraine forever. I mean, this is ridiculous, especially when this is the condition of the UK. The UK government is now admitting they've essentially lost control of the West Midlands. They are afraid to enforce anything on the Islamic communities in the West Midlands because they're armed and will fight back. So they want to send young English boys to Ukraine to die in a fight against Russia while their own homeland is being colonized to the point that the UK government is unwilling to even try to get these people out. Let's watch.
Why are we only hearing about this now? Why is it that there's a report that's come at lunchtime today from the Times newspaper that you had information on the 5th of September that there were likely to be vigilante groups within the West Midlands community itself who were planning to take action against the Maccabi fans? How is it that this committee is just hearing this for the first time?
Well, I think this is the first time specifically that you've asked for that detail. That's what we tried.
Outrageous.
That's what we tried to get across.
Absolutely outrageous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So police were like afraid to tell that the mosques were arming themselves and have militias that are roving around hurting people because they're afraid, because the Muslims are armed and will fight back. See, they can crush the British people because the British people will go along with it. They won't fight back. They won't arm themselves. They won't kill the police officers that come to get them. The Muslims will. So the Muslims aren't subject to laws. The English people are. And the people that have presided over this have just signed an agreement to send soldiers to Ukraine to defend that landmass that has been depopulated for the profit margins of Goldman Sachs and BlackRock. It is sickeningly evil what's happening there, and they want it to happen forever, at least till they get World War III kicked off in full force.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexJonesStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. Now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rating, 5 milligrams of this a day. Most people think creatine is just about better muscle, healthier, more stamina. It's been proven. It's been documented. I'll show you what Grok had to say about it here in just a moment. But the first thing you need to understand is that it's not just making your muscles better or your body be able to do more exercise. It's doing all these incredible things for your brain and everything else. And that's really more and more what scientists are saying people should focus on with creatine. And just since I've been taking creatine for the last few months, it has had dramatic effects on my clarity, my focus, my energy, especially when used with ultramethylene blue. Again, everybody knows about muscle and performance, or most people do, but what are the other benefits? Grok says secondary emerging benefits, improves anaerobic capacity and power output, may increase glycogen storage in muscles when combined with carbs. Potential brain benefits, improves cognitive performance under sleep deprivation or mental fatigue, possible neuroprotective effects being studied in traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, depression, etc. May benefit vegetarians and others who have a lower level of creatine in their diet. Who benefits the most? Older adults, strength and power, people with low dietary creatine. It goes on and on. Bottom line, if you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. It is, of course, January 6th. It is the fifth anniversary of that fateful day, the insurrection, the wandering through the Capitol. And as much as we make light of the fact that it was anything but an insurrection, it was not violent, nobody had weapons, nobody from the police were killed. It was a tragedy. It was an event in which multiple people on our side were killed, some of them brutally. For Ashley Babbitt, she was murdered at point-blank range by a man who has now been discovered has defrauded the American government for around $190 million. And, of course, the situation around her getting shot was so outrageous, and you can see from the videos on that day that they could have stopped her at any point. They actually moved police out of the way. That only allowed her to move forward. If they'd never moved those police, she never would have tried to go through the door, never would have been shot by Michael Byrd. Our reporter, Sam Montoya, was there in the room filming when it happened. He later went to jail despite being a journalist there capturing the event and really got put through the ringer as a consequence of this. And he joins me now by telephone. You can follow him on X at Sam C. Montoya. Sam, thank you so much for calling in. It's great to hear from you.
Harrison, hey, buddy, it's good to talk to you in a new year, 2026. Can you hear me good?
Man, you sound upbeat, and it wasn't always the case, man. There was a time there for a while that you were really suffering under the oppression from the United States government. How do you feel now, looking back 5 years later, on how everything went down on January 6th? What's your perspective now from so far away?
Right on. Well, what a question, right? 5 years later, and so much has changed. It's a pleasure to be with you on the War Room. You know, my old stomping grounds. I used to be the editor there, and that was just the best time of my life. But I'll tell you, obviously, they definitely tried to persecute me, and I know that it was because I worked at InfoWars that they tried even harder to try to, you know, maybe go to Alex through me, yeah. Find something that I did wrong, that InfoWars may have done wrong so that they could continue their persecution. But God is good. He's a miracle worker. And, I mean, look where we're at now. We got Trump as president. And, things are definitely upbeat, just like you said.
Well, but tell us what happened with you. I mean, you spent some time behind bars from this, right? I mean, are you just trying to put all that behind you? But what happened to you exactly?
You know, I guess you're right. That was hard stuff, and I think about it every year. It's not a great anniversary. You know, I sometimes tell people happy January 6th, but at the same time, I heard you earlier talking about Ashley Babbitt.
Yeah.
And it's more of a somber memorial that we should have for her, because in my eyes, she was there as a patriot.
Yeah.
And she didn't even get the military burial that she deserved.
Right.
And I just hope that one day people advocate that changes. Maybe President Trump can do something about that, because that's not right. But to start from the beginning, actually, my journey might actually more begin with January 20th, the day Biden got inaugurated.
Right.
January 20th, 2021, that's when things started going south for me. But I'll say, obviously January 6th was a day that, you know, a lot of people have different opinions about. But from my perspective, I know why I was there. I know why InfoWars was there. And we were there to protest the fraudulent, certification of votes in certain states where the votes had been manipulated in certain ways, and all we wanted was to have a recount.
Yeah, and we were there specifically to support Congress in what they were doing.
Right.
It literally, the last thing we wanted was to have a disruption in those proceedings. So the whole narrative around this has been wrong from the beginning. More with Sam Montoya on the other side. This man has been through hell because he happened to be there trying to do what's right.
I'm funded by you, and I appreciate your support. Very humbly, thank you for your support, those that have. Those that have it, what are you waiting for? Our information is bar none the best. The supplements are game-changing. The Methylene Blue, the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the widest selection of Patriot Apparel t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. But there's a deal going for a few more days where you buy any supplement and get a bottle of the Shilajit gummies or Atomic Defense Super Immune Booster free. You choose which free gift you want. That funds our operation, thealexjonesstore.com. And I want to thank those that have stood with us. If you're going to buy anything, become a VIP. Just in your profile, $30 a month, cancel any time, no charge. You get $40 every time you spend $30. Dispense. You make $10 if you're going to buy anything, you should be a VIP. Then you get special deals, special offers, special sales on top of everything. Also, you get big discounts when you use the app for Android or for Apple at alexjonesapp.com. This links you through to get the free apps right there. So it's the same shopping cart online. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I want to thank you all for your support.
Tuned in to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, 5 years on, the tragedy of January 6th still lives on. The people that started the riot in the first place, I'd blame that squarely on the Capitol Police, who fired into a peaceful crowd, driving them forward into the insufficient line of police that then fell back. The electronic doors were opened mysteriously. You had police high-fiving people as they went in. Those people later to be dragged out of their home in the middle of the night and charged with terrorism and sent to jail, in some cases for decades. Luckily, they've all been pardoned by President Trump. One of maybe four or five things I would point to in Trump's administration as unqualified good. No, well, it's good, but it could be better. No, well, it was okay. Well, and even that, maybe I could caveat that because I know people like Joe Biggs and Stuart Rhodes are looking for a pardon, not a commutation. So, all right, even that, maybe a little bit. But regardless, he promised he would pardon everybody. He pardoned everybody. Blanket pardon. Sam Montoya, our former editor and cameraman and reporter here at InfoWars, was one of those pardoned. Thank God. I would add, by the way, to Trump's unqualified victories is the total destruction of the childhood vaccine schedule that he did yesterday, taking it from 72 to 11. So there have been some really good things from Trump, and I think the best thing he's done so far are these January 6th pardons. They were a rectification of an injustice. But the people that carried these out, the people that put my friends in jail, the people that hunted down thousands of innocent people, destroyed their lives, leaving many people to suicide and in the worst case scenario, but divorces and just ruining people's lives. They haven't been held to account. People that carried on the January 6th fake show trial have not been punished. Michael Byrd, who murdered Ashley Babbitt in cold blood, shooting her at point blank range without warning in a totally unnecessary murder, was not only rewarded and given a medal over it, it's now been revealed he ran a scheme, the one of these child care schemes, bilking $190 million out of the U.S. government, which I can't help but think was somehow a part of what allowed him to get away with it all. Sam Montoya joins me now by phone. You can follow him on X at Sam C. Montoya. 5 years later, we're revisiting January 6th. How do you feel about what has happened in the ensuing 5 years, and especially in the last year? Obviously, we're so happy that Trump pardoned everybody. But I'd say it hasn't been enough. We still haven't seen charges for the people that did this to you all. And that's sort of an inconsistency. If we recognize that it was an illegitimate prosecution, if we recognize these people were railroaded and oppressed by their own government, somebody has to pay for that. Sam, what's your take on all of this? And how do you feel that Trump has handled this situation so far?
You know, listening to you there, Harrison, it's so important that we tell our story truthfully, because all day long I've been seeing that this is a day that Trump is going to whitewash, that he's going to rewrite history. That's what the mainstream media is saying, and that's not true. I was there, and I know what I saw. I know who was where, what they were saying, and it's not the story. The people that are trying to change and rewrite history is them.
Right.
It's like you said, it's the things that Michael Byrd did, they're covering up. Not that we don't know what he did, but the way that they're portraying it, this is a man who's a murderer. And this is a man who is, in my opinion, he was an assassin, the way that he pointed that gun at Ashley Babbitt that day. Okay, so, and that's the truth of it. I was there. Now, I will also say one other thing. You asked how I feel about being pardoned. What can a man say? How many people get the chance to get pardoned by a president in their whole life? And of course, you know, everyone feels like they're innocent. But I will say this, you know, thinking about what I could say, this or that, you know, I've recently been locking in on my Bible reading like I should, 2026. And I feel like I have to give God glory, because I don't think it was Trump that pardoned me. I think God pardoned me because he used Trump to right something that was wrong. He used Trump to bring justice to the unjustifiable persecution. Right. Of American citizens by the government. So that being said, obviously Trump is not, you know, an angel. I'm not saying anything like that. But I know that God's hand is on him and that he's anointed for this time. And I have evidence, because even though I was going through that, you know, persecution and political, you know, obstacle, because I had to spend so much money of my own money to fight in the courts, I had to spend so much time, my reputation, and I wasn't the only one. But they really went after me, obviously, because at the time I was working for InfoWars. And I will say this, too. I wish that somebody had told me not to go in, to be honest. And I'll tell you what I mean by that, because at the moment that everybody was at the Capitol building, we got separated. We were separated. And so, you know, nobody told me to go in. But my training kicked in because, you know, you had been my colleague for many years, and you saw that whenever there was something going on, whether it's a BLM protest or an Antifa, you know, protest, or here or there with Owen, with Savannah, with whatever, you know, I would volunteer. I'd go out there. I'd been out there in the field, as they say, many times. So seeing that people were going in, I went in, and the rest is history. You can watch my video with no edits. We posted it right away as soon as I got back, and it starts with me outside the building and sadly ends with the murder and assassination of Ashley Babbitt, a patriot, and in my opinion, a martyr, because we all could have gotten hurt, you know, as if the police had, you know, decided to start shooting a bunch of people, something like that. But when the people, you know, feel that they're put into a corner, of course, protests are going to happen. So I was there to record. Like you said, there were other people from other news organizations that were also in the building. Even on my footage, I was standing next to somebody who was with National Geographic, and he had this big, nice camera. All I had was an iPhone. And I got better footage than he did, probably.
Right.
But the point is that he was there. There were others there. But the government, Biden's government, chose not to even speak to them or anything like that, because they wanted to persecute me because I worked for InfoWars. And that's not right. So, you know, looking back as, you know, what's gone on through these 5 years, I just see God's hand moving on America. God's hand moving on Trump, on my life, and bringing us to a place where we can be prosperous and know that, you know, he is going to be in control and he's going to be the one to help us get through the tribulation to the light at the end of the tunnel. So that's kind of how I feel about it, to be honest.
Yeah, well, and you know, I've just I always so admire anybody I talk to and I'm friends with that you know, whether it's Stuart Rhodes or Enrique Tarrio or Joe Biggs, I mean, you guys are something special. I mean, it's you know, clearly everybody who went through the experience you went through has come out on the other side so much more faithful and so much more sort of grounded in their beliefs. Like, I don't know anybody that went, oh, that was stupid, I was wrong, I should have never been there. Everybody goes, no, it was right, I was there, and I had to suffer the punishment, and that's what God wanted for me, so that's what I'm going to do. It's incredibly admirable. What is your take on the rest of what Trump has been doing this year and the FBI, and do you think there's going to be justice for the people that did this to you, that went after you, that you know, tried to pressure you to, you know, claim Alex ordered you or whatever happened? I'm just speculating here, but obviously the prosecutions were totally illegitimate. The complete fabricated show trial was a complete farce and an insult to our judicial system. Well, what do you want to see Trump do? Are you happy with what he's doing so far? And what's your take on the FBI now that Kash Patel is in charge?
Yeah, that's a topic I guess I haven't really thought about, because as a Christian, you want to always think about forgiveness. Mm. Even though, you know, when people do you wrong, they do deserve to be held accountable, 100%. So I will tell you this, thinking about it right now, I'm not happy. I'm not happy that these people are still out there, because they're going to do it again.
Right.
You know, this is why we don't let pedophiles go. This is why we don't let murderers go. They're going to go out and they're going to do it again.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because of deep state loyalties between different, you know, these three-letter alphabet, you know, organizations. They try to, you know, cover each other's ass, try to say, no, he was just following orders, this or that. And so they prevent these prosecutions from taking place because people need to go to jail.
Yeah.
But what they did, people need to go to jail, but, you know, it's tough because you look at the way people are framing the story in mainstream media, and they're playing over and over and over these certain clips, like where the guy's getting crushed,
mm-hmm.
You know, I've been crushed harder at a concert,
right.
You know, at Rage Against the Machine, and I'm not even saying nothing to that guy, but he didn't die. I was standing next to a person that died that
right.
day. I was standing next to Ashley Babbitt. And they keep on with this narrative that it caused people to commit suicide later on. Hey, you know, we all go through a wilderness. I'm not saying it's a good thing, and I'm trying to have compassion for these men. But you think I didn't go through depression when my own government was – I was locked in my house. I had an ankle monitor around my ankle. I couldn't go anywhere. I could go to church for an hour once a week. I could go to the grocery store just to pick up groceries for an hour once a week. The rest of the time, locked in my house, and my own home was a prison. I mean, Owen went through persecution too. And I'm not saying he, you know, that it was the same or different. What I'm saying is he didn't even go in. I did, you know. And like you said, I know that it's fine. I'm fine. I'm fine with persecution. I know God made me stronger about it. But like you're saying, if Trump doesn't get his act together and get these people where they stand, it's going to happen again. And it's going to happen worse. So I don't know if there's things going on. Maybe Kash Patel bit off more than he can chew with being able to address this deep state issue. But it has to be a priority. Now, I will say this, though. Seeing that Trump is, you know, he has a lot of irons in the fire, as they say. He can multitask better than any president, obviously. And seeing what he's done with Venezuela, seeing what he's done with the vaccines and health, and what he's done with all these other things, that he's able to keep doing other things. He might be already investigating some of these people that were responsible for. You know, exacerbating the situation at January 6th. because really there was so many things that could have happened that would have made January 6th a very safe and normal protest, you know, without there being more than just people with signs and, you know, yelling or whatever, like any protest. But those safeguards were not there, and people took advantage. People went in.
Yeah.
So I definitely do hope that Trump gets a handle on this, but I don't know. I trust him and I trust God, so I guess I'm just hopeful.
Well, and I the thing I don't trust necessarily is the American people being able to sort of see through the lies. I guess that's sort of my final question for you. And I appreciate you calling in, and you know, we miss you here. And of course, I want to again encourage people to follow you on X at Sam C. Montoya. And you can just see the quality, the level of people that we have behind the scenes at InfoWars. I mean, Sam's obviously an exceptional guy, but not amongst us, right? Like this is the level of like commitment and level-headedness. Like this is who we are at InfoWars, and we've paid the price for it, and Sam has paid the price greater than just about any of us. So we really owe him a debt of gratitude. So my last question for you is sort of what do you think of the historical fact of January 6th now? What do you think the average American feels about it? How do you think the story of January 6th has changed? And like looking into the future, what do you think people are going to believe about January 6th maybe 100 years from now? How do you think January 6th is being treated historically?
I think that people are definitely trying to make it seem like a Pearl Harbor situation, a 9/11 situation, with, you know, the leftist mainstream media pushing that narrative. However, I think that there's enough people that are using their mind and their logic to listen and to understand the testimonies of people like me and other people that were there, so that they can see the full story. So I'm hopeful that people will see the full story later on, but it's really going to take people who were there, like me. You know, there were other people that you know that were there, friends of ours that were there, that they have to continue to share their version of it, because it can be overwhelming. It can be overwhelming when everybody is telling you this is how it was, this is what happened, and it just wasn't like that for you. Mm. And it just and that's not why I was there. I wasn't there to go in a building. I wasn't there to do anything against the police. I was there to take a stand for my values, for the Republic of that gave me everything I have. I was there because I was grateful. And I will say one last thing before you let me go. You know that text message about it being wild, that Trump said it's going to be wild? Yeah. That was about InfoWars. He didn't say anything. And I don't know if you guys have ever said this story, but basically he had planned to walk down Constitutional Avenue. None of this happened because the rest is history. But his plan was to walk down Constitutional Avenue, up the Capitol steps, stand next to Alex with a bullhorn and give a speech, and it was going to be wild. And that's what he was talking about. None of that happened.
Right.
And that sucked. But you know, it's that kind of, you know, he's a master at marketing. He knows how to get the message across. Something like that would have been on every newspaper in the world if that image had taken place, but that didn't. That didn't. And you know, that's maybe unfortunate because it was not how we planned that day to go. But God is going to do something in America. He's done something in America. And even if we had to go through the wilderness for 4 years with Joseph Retard Biden, we still came out with Donald John Trump. And so I just give God the glory for that.
Well, let me keep you on for a little longer because, and I'm going to tell the crew, go back to that video. So we were just coming up to the part of the video, and this video is full unedited from the day you uploaded it on January 6th, 5 years ago. It's on band.video. It's your full, you know, unedited, what you captured that day going in. And it ends, of course, with the assassination of Ashley Babbitt. And you were just talking about sort of, the misconceptions people have, the way this is portrayed that's so inaccurate. Walk us through this. Tell us what you were experiencing, what you were feeling at this moment. I mean, when the gun goes off, it must have been a shock. What was the mood, you know, leading up to it? And then when the gunshot goes off, how does it feel? And sorry, before you answer, I just want to point out to people watching the video, they're the police leaving, right? The police were standing there blocking the way. They move out of the way. They leave, allowing Ashley Babbitt to move forward where she shot. I mean, this was a setup. So I just want to say that. And there's the shoot happened. So walk us through this. What was it like being there on the ground? This is Sam Montoya's footage that you're seeing right here.
Cool. I can't, I'm just on the phone. I can't see what you're looking at, but I think I've seen that footage a billion times.
Yeah.
So I'll try to remember. Let me say that, of course, again, being a Christian, I look at things through a spiritual lens first, and there's a scream on that footage that, just sounds very demonic, and it happens literally right before the shot rings off into Ashley, towards Ashley and gets her. So I don't know what was going on in that room, but I definitely feel like there was a darkness, that there was a principality situation, you know, going on. And I'll say this, as far as the way I was feeling physically, my heart was beating, you know, I had adrenaline pumping, I'm sure. And just like you saw that police officer getting crushed, I was surrounded, you know, by other protesters, patriots, you know, on all sides. I didn't feel like I was getting crushed. But what I'm saying is I definitely felt like claustrophobic, to where I just felt like something was about to happen. And you don't see this on the footage because my camera's pointed towards the speaker's lobby windows and stuff like that. But I stuck my hands up in the air and I put up a peace sign, you know, like a hippie. And I just start yelling, peace, peace. I didn't know what else to do because everybody was going, you know, they were all getting excited, a little riled up, and the police were getting, you know, information or for whatever was going to happen. But then right as soon as I'm done yelling peace, the shot rings out and I see, you know, what's going on with Ashley. I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. I couldn't believe that somebody had gotten hit right in front of me. I just, you know, let my training kick in and tried to keep the whatever was happening in focus, and while also, you know, in frame or however you want to say it, but while also staying out of the way of the police officers, because the number one priority was to try to save her life. If you're asking me how I was feeling in that exact moment, that's it. I really wasn't thinking about the camera. I mean, but putting it down wouldn't have done anything. So I obviously kept holding on to the camera. But you see me stay in there, and I'm going to cuss. But as soon as she gets shot and I see the cops around, I run through the crowd and I say, "You make a fucking hole, move, make a fucking hole." Because I'm telling people that we need to try to get her body to an ambulance or something. So you do see that happen. And then I go back into the speaker's lobby. She was still there. I find out later that one of the cops was telling me, he was like, we even if you would have cleared away a path for us, we wouldn't have taken it. And I was like, why? If I would have cleared a path for you, you still wouldn't have taken it? He's like, because we don't know what's going to happen down that path. So from a law enforcement perspective, it would have been dangerous for them to go down a path with her. And I was like, well, that doesn't make sense to me, because you should be trying to save her life,
right?
But wow. they had to try to give her, render medical aid right there, and you see them, I guess, try, but before they take her down the stairs to another doorway.
You know, I was live covering, because everybody from InfoWars was there, so I was sitting in the big seat doing Alex Jones show, and I'll never forget the moment that I saw them wheel her out on the stretcher. I mean, that image is burned into my brain. I can only imagine what it's like for you. Thank you so much for calling in, Sam. Follow Sam on X at Sam C. Montoya. So good to hear from you, man. And, so glad that you're able to put this behind you and move on. You're not sitting rotting away in a jail cell. And, you, like so many others, have seemingly been strengthened by this and strengthened in your faith by it and everything. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you guys. Love you guys.
Love you too. God bless. Sam Montoya. Follow him at Sam C. Montoya on X. Really an incredibly brave guy who just went through hell thanks to the Biden administration and came out strong on the other side. absolutely incredible. We'll be back with more on the other side. Still a lot of big stories to cover, and we'll be right back. Remember to support us at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. We'll be right back.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug that Irish Sea Moss was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. All that stopped with the sea moss because it's a thyroid issue, and the sea moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue, the methylene blue, life changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. It's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his supplement formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together, and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I love the greens powder. I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it. And it has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's good, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
And are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones Fisher is on like my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's amazing.
We love Alex.
Some people call in and go, this person, you're paying them. But like, no, our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to like the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones when I found him, and I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio, and 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid. So, your life's going great.
Yeah.
I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it like happens all the time with iodine. Iodine's one of those things where like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor, it's not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is, but it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin, you're missing a mineral, and you don't even realize until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish Sea Moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. No, turns out you can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, I got so many stories to cover in this final segment. I really got to pick and choose, I guess. So I could spend hours on any one of these. Chrystia Freeland, being appointed as Zelensky's advisor. Very coincidentally, you've got this story, Somali UN Security Council president involved with healthcare company guilty of Medicare fraud in Ohio. Oh, it goes all the way up to the top, folks. This story is making waves. Only fan models and influencers are claiming over half of the coveted U.S. visas meant for artists. A shocking number of U.S. visas reserved for artists of extraordinary ability are going to scantily clad OnlyFans creators and other social media influencers. It was once used to allow John Lennon to stay in the country, but now it's being used by the likes of Bop House stars who come to the U.S. to make adult content. Isn't that interesting? So, over half of the clients seeking coveted O-1B visas in recent years are either performers on the pornography platform or some other kind of influencer, top immigration lawyers told the Florida Phoenix. Yes, apparently we're handing out visas to sluts, to whores. We have a whore visa going. Isn't that nice? We don't have enough whores in this country. We have to import them. Now look, if our immigration system was dominated by sexy ladies, they wouldn't allow it to exist. So, no, it exists because the vast majority of people coming to Western countries are adult men. So, if they were all beautiful women, it would be shut down the next day. Tomorrow, or rather, I guess Friday, will be a day that the Supreme Court will determine whether Trump's tariffs are allowed to continue to operate. Prediction markets suggest a mere 24% chance that Trump's tariffs are upheld. So that could be a very interesting economic day. With the news that Waltz's, this is from Drew Holden on X. With the news that Walt's reelection campaign won't survive the spiraling child care center fraud scandal in his state, I want to re-up some of the worst legacy media outlet, some of the worst legacy media efforts to put lipstick on this particular pig. And he has a whole thread of the way they try to spin the story of the Medicare fraud in Minnesota. From the New York Times, a few weeks ago, wrote an extensive piece about how fraud swamped Minnesota's social services on Tim Walz's watch. But then Nick Shirley gets the video, and they're there trying to downplay it and say, well, I mean, it's not that big of a deal, actually. Just very funny, again, because, you know, Republicans can't actually believe anything. I mean, sure, we uncover hundreds of billions of dollars worth of fraud that's being robbed from every taxpayer and that every taxpayer should be concerned with, but it's politically charged footage. So, you know, do we even believe it, really? Tim Walz admits guilt in explosive Smalley fraud scandal. I haven't seen that video. We can pull that in. I'd like to play that a little bit. Now, we have another story, sort of a follow-up, the conclusion to a saga that we've been reporting on for a while. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting dissolves itself after Trump's funding cuts. Now, I know a lot of people on the right were in favor of this. I'm not. Just to be perfectly honest with you, I think PBS is a good thing. I think NPR is a good thing, even if for no other reason than you have, you know, ad-free content for children that, okay, some of it's not great, but a lot of it is the stuff I watched in the 90s, right? I mean, you can sit down and watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for all eternity on PBS. I think that's actually kind of a nice thing, you know, especially with streaming services costing more than cable packages used to at this point. I think it's kind of nice that you can offer a service to low-income Americans that they can actually have some quality entertainment for their kids. I don't know. I think it's like, are we not a first world nation? Can we not provide this basic service? It's like a couple million bucks a year. Is that really that big of a deal? But my argument was always, why don't we just take it over? Yeah, okay, it's bad. It's been taken over by liberals. It's been taken over by leftists. And it puts out, you know, political hogwash. I get that. I'm against that. Can we not turn it to our ends? Can we not take it over and use these same programs to push our values on the American people? Is that not the right thing to do in this situation? And apparently that was impossible. Apparently that was not an option. You either had to let it be leftist or you had to destroy it outright. We chose to destroy it outright. meaning that, you know, come 2026, the Democrats are going to have that to run on. Say these Republicans just don't want you to have good entertainment. They just see that PBS was a free thing that minorities enjoyed, so they wanted to get rid of it. I know it's a stupid argument, but that's the argument that they're going to make. It's going to be extremely, politically valuable for them. I think it was shooting ourselves in the own foot, foot. And I have to point out that when CBS News was not sufficiently pro-Zionist, they took that over and completely changed the editorial direction. Somehow CBS News was capable of doing this. Not an option with Corporation of Public Broadcasting, not an option for NPR or PBS. Totally impossible that we would remove their leadership and put in leadership that aligns with us. Totally out of the question that we could systematically change their editorial direction to be one more in line with the traditional American values. Not an option, not possible, not even a moment of discussion about that. But I think that would have been the more valuable thing. I think that would have been the more successful operation to pull, but I guess it doesn't exist anymore. So well done, us. Good job. Of course, it will continue to exist because the left has billionaires and they'll pour money into it. It's only going to become more left wing. You understand that, right? They're just going to make up the difference with, you know, NGO money, which is just taxpayer money one step removed. And they're going to not be under any requirement to be fair at all about anything. So, yeah, I just think this is stupid. I think if you can buy CBS News and put Barry Weiss as the editor and change the entire editorial direction that CBS News pumps out, you couldn't do that for PBS. You couldn't do that for NPR. That was impossible. I don't buy it. So I think it's just a stupid thing to do, quite frankly. I think it's going to backfire in a whole bunch of different ways. Meanwhile, we haven't spent nearly as much time as we should on the terror attack in Berlin over the weekend when leftists committed an arson attack that took out power for a huge swath of Berlin in one of the most harsh winters they faced in recent times. A local electricity operator reported that power has now been restored to about 14,000 households. And nearly 500 commercial customers. Several large hospitals were back online. But this was, there are like a number of reasons why this deserves attention. One is because it was such a crazy attack. I mean, it was just a blatant terrorist attack. Left-wing groups in Germany just took credit for it. And we're like, yeah, that was us. We did that. Okay, I have the feeling we're going to see a lot more of this. I have the feeling that they're beta testing this operation and they're understanding that they can get away with it. Because the other thing on top of this is the lack of reporting on this. You have things like BBC, which has headlines that are like, well, you know, leftist organization takes credit for attack in Germany. And then just moves on. Can you imagine? Can you possibly imagine if a right-wing group in Germany took out a power station? The panic, the outrage, the new laws that would be passed, the, you know, nationwide lockdown that would ensue. Barely even get to mention. Because it was left-wingers, because people in charge are in favor of the left-wingers. Then on top of that, when this happens, the German government rapidly moves in and evacuates all the illegal aliens from the area that was affected. The nursing homes, the old German people, the cancer patients, the people on dialysis in hospitals, they weren't evacuated. The illegal immigrants were. Then the German government tried to charge the German people that were displaced like $100 a night to stay, money that they were not charging to the illegal immigrants. And there was a bunch of outrage and they had to basically back off that and say, okay, we'll cover your stay too. So it's like, do you have any idea? Do you understand what's happening right now? That Germany is being collapsed on purpose, that their industry is dissolving. It's going away completely. Their left-wing radicals are actively now attacking and destroying the infrastructure. The government is not punishing them for that and is instead using it as an excuse to, of course, crack down more on right-wingers and to give illegal immigrants, you know, even greater benefits while depriving the German people and actually trying to exploit the German people who were the victims of this crime by forcing them to pay money to stay in a hotel. It's crazy. It's just so insane what's happening in Germany right now. And it's not any better in UK either. Things like British University urging an M2 exams because they want to decolonize their business school because exams favor white students. But now I want to get to this story about Trump. Because this is, I don't know what to make of this. I'll show you the clip. We'll comment on it. I'll try to get a handle on what exactly is happening here. Clip number one. This is Donald Trump talking about the danger he faces if we don't win the midterms this year. Here's Donald Trump.
But you got to win the midterms, because if we don't win the midterms, it's just going to be, I mean, they'll find a reason to impeach me. I'll get impeached. We don't impeach them. You know why? Because they're meaner than we are. We should have impeached Joe Biden for 100 different things.
Yeah, they're going to impeach you, Trump. For sure. 100%. They definitely are. So here's the problem. Here's the problem. Okay. It's like a chain of events, right? Because if they impeach Trump, then that means this is sort of the end of Trump's presidency. Right. He's going to be tied up in the impeachment. He's not going to be able to focus on anything else. It'll be a giant media circus. I mean, we've been through this before. We know how this works. They don't need anything to base it on. They'll just come up with some random supposed anonymous whistleblower. And if you try to name who they are, Twitter will delete your account. Right. Like, again, we've been through this. We know what happened. OK, so if they impeach Trump, that's essentially the end of Trump's administration. They don't even have to impeach him. If they just win the midterms and take over the House and the Senate, that's the end of Trump's administration for all intents and purposes. That is the end of the Trump agenda, getting anything done, if you can even argue it got anything done up to this point. So if they win the midterm elections, then they will impeach Trump. If they impeach Trump, then that will be the end of the Trump administration and their effectiveness for this, you know, second round. If they're able to impeach Trump and end his policies, then they'll probably be able to get into office next time. If they get into office in 2028, that's the end of America, right? Because they're going to not only pass citizenship by the back door for everybody who's already here illegally, tens of millions of people, as Chuck Schumer has admitted. He said verbatim, our goal is to get a citizenship for the 11 million or however many illegals are here. Okay. You open the border, you bring in tens of millions more while simultaneously certifying or, you know, giving citizenship to the tens of millions that are already here. That's the end of America. Okay. So if we trace back the line, it's if the Democrats win the midterms, then that's the end of America. Okay. Cause and effect. That's the series of events that leads to that. And that's not even to mention the fact that they're going to throw Trump in prison. They're going to throw all of Trump's family in prison. They're going to throw anybody that helped Trump or followed Trump's orders in prison. They're announcing this. They're saying this is what they're going to do. They are making lists right now for people that they plan to bring up on charges for merely following orders from the duly elected president of the United States. So what if we go the other way, right? If we start off on impeachment, we go to the right. We go forward in time, we can see the end of Trump's administration, the voting system doesn't get fixed, they can rig the election from then on out, they get elected, they give citizenship, they open the border, they crush their opposition, they destroy the filibuster, they get to pass whatever they want, they eliminate the Second Amendment, they eliminate the First Amendment. I mean, it's over. Okay, that's what happens if you go right. What if you go left? Like, how do we get to this point? Well, if you don't fulfill your promises, then you lose the midterms. If you don't deport enough people, then you lose the midterms. If you don't do what you ran on, if you don't fulfill your promises and stop being the slathering dog of Israel and committing arguable war crimes all over the world for no benefit for the American people. If you continue on the path that you've been on for the last, let me check the calendar, year at this point, then you're going to lose the midterms. And if you lose the midterms, you're going to be impeached. And if you're going to be impeached, that's the end of your agenda. And if it's the end of your agenda, it's the end of America. So if you don't want America to be over, you need to do what you ran on. You need to take the gloves off. You need to arrest the Democrats that are encouraging mutiny against you. I mean, as we speak, not only are the Seditious Six, who made a video encouraging the army to not follow orders, not only have they not been brought up on sedition charges and, frankly, sentenced to death, they're still making statements. They're still doubling down. The worst thing that has happened is that apparently Mark Kelly got censured, whatever that means. They've slightly diminished his retirement payments or something. The man should be on death row, okay? But that's not happening. They're not doing that. At the same time, you have well-funded leftist groups publicly calling for leftists in the military to commit mutiny, to get in contact with them so they can have a network of soldiers in the American army who are there as mutineers, who are ready and willing to participate in an uprising against the lawful authority of our government inside the army. They're making billboards about this. There are like public groups that are out there with advertisements saying, hey, if you're in the army and don't like Donald Trump, you get in contact with us. We'll help you. If you want to disobey orders, you get in contact with us. We'll connect you to other people who want to disobey orders. Maybe in your own battalion, maybe you guys can group up together. Like, there are leftist organizations, as we speak, publicly encouraging seditious activity inside the American army. Nobody's doing anything about it. Nobody's stopping it. Democrats are only doubling down. So Trump, it is ridiculous how in control you are of the outcome of this. It's entirely up to you, Donald Trump. It is entirely up to you whether you go down in history as the man who saved America or you go down in history as the man who had a chance to save America and chose not to. As the guy we were playing earlier this week said. That really is it. Ball's in your court. If you listen to Susie Wiles and you spend this entire year on the campaign trail promising things you have not delivered yet, you're going to lose. If you keep going after Thomas Massie, like you are, you're going to lose. And we can't afford you to lose. If you lose, we all lose. But how motivated do you think even your diehard supporters are to go out and vote in the midterms? You know, we've played the clip a few times. Susie Wiles saying Trump doesn't know it yet, but we're going to treat 2026 like 2024. He's going to be on the campaign trail the whole time. And it's like, I think they're trying to destroy you, Trump. I think they're trying to distract you. I think they're trying to wear you out. I think they're trying to play into your ego so you can spend this whole year gallivanting around the United States, doing barn burners, you know, for some congressman that has never voted for you, did not have your back for any of the crap you've been put through for the last 10 years, and won't have your back in the future, but you're going to waste your time going out and campaigning for them when they give you nothing in return. I mean, this is such a setup. And like I keep saying to Trump, if somebody out there can get this message to him, you got to break free, man. You got to just do what you have to do. I don't know what is motivating you behind the scenes. I don't know what blackmail. I don't know what promises you've been made. But it requires an explanation because it makes no sense. Even for your own self-preservation, you have to arrest the deep state. You have to deport tens of millions of people. We physically, literally, do not have the capability of charging every Somali who has defrauded us. Literally, we can't do it. When you have an entire community of tens of thousands of people all in some way associated with or participating in or helping to cover up fraud, What are you going to have, 10,000 courthouse trials? You need 10,000 judges with 10,000 lawyers, 10,000 prosecutors, 10,000 jurors multiplied by 12. Like, it's not possible. It's not possible. The fraud they've committed is too great. I see headlines. 90 Somalis have been charged. No. We need 50,000 Somalis deported. That needs to be the headline. Or else America is gone forever. Okay, so the ball's entirely in your court. It's entirely up to Donald Trump. He can continue the path that he's on right now, lose the midterm elections, be impeached, have obstacles thrown up in front of him constantly, just sort of spend the last half of his second administration as a lame duck on the back foot, playing defense, trying to, stay out of jail, only to, spend the rest of your life being hunted like an animal by a, newly empowered and reinvigorated left. Or you can crush them and you have all the power, all the tools, all the public will you need to do so. You can just do it or not. So the choice is yours. You know you have to do. You know we want you to do. Your instincts seem to inform you on, what you should be doing. You just don't do it. You're not doing it. So that's just where we're at. Okay. So again, he's like, oh, they're going to impeach me. He's like, Trump in bizarre cancel election rants as he warns he'll be impeached. And he said, he's like, I don't want to cancel the election, but maybe we will. And it's just like, dude, literally just do what we asked. Just arrest the bad guys. You have more evidence than you could ever possibly need to round up and arrest 2 dozen people from Russiagate, cover up of Russiagate, the 2020 election theft. I mean, it's there. The crown is in the gutter. You can pick it up, put it on your head, secure your legacy and the future of the United States, or you can continue to let it wallow and end up despised by not only your enemies, but the people that once supported you. So, I don't know what Israel's telling you, but that's the actual situation you're in. All right. So it sucks, but hey, at least he seems to recognize. At least he seems to in some way understand. Yeah, dude, if you don't win the midterms, you're screwed. It's just I think I'm worried that he thinks, okay, to win the midterms, I should go campaign like Susie Wiles said, which is the wrong course of action. You'll win by destroying the deep state and eliminating the Democrats out of contention by crushing their money laundering operations that are all centered around fraud. Again, it's just literally just do it. So you just do it. Just feel free to do it anytime you want. You're not, though, so don't blame us when nobody votes for you. And nobody votes for the people that you tell to vote for, especially people like Thomas Massie. So really sucks. Really sucks how much success we've had only to have it all squandered for the sake of Israel. And that is the obvious interpretation from anybody paying attention. That's going to about do it for us, folks. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let him know who sent you. And there is a massive sale on right now that I honestly think might be a mistake. I'm not, like I've said this before, because really our sales are crazy, where it's like buy one, get one, but you can buy a cheap one and get an expensive one. That didn't make any sense. It's crazy right now. Like, I'm not even going to tell you what the sale is. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. 40% off everything site-wide. That is an unbelievable sale, folks. Go today.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do, yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, This was the best spike protein detoxer she found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win, but regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Oh, oh, oh.